following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboo, and at swn.shiningwizards.com.
Hey, this is Scott Keith, formerly the NetCop, and you're listening to the Shining Wizards podcast.
Are we live?
Yeah, I think we're live. Go for it.
Wow, this is quite an exciting event.
Of course it is.
Do I need to do a proper... You're really live?
Yeah, we're on right now.
Oh man, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another wonderful episode of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast, where it's wrestling talk.
And talk about wrestling.
And we are in the presence of, in my opinion, and we've had this argument 100 times in this podcast... The greatest diva, the greatest woman ever involved in wrestling, my childhood crush, which I'm sure you get to hear that all the time, Tammy Sitch. For some of you, you might know her better as Sunny. To me, she is the girl of my dreams. She is on the line with us. Tammy, how are you?
Join the club.
Oh, man. Let me tell you something.
You and how many others?
There was a Raw, right? A Raw magazine. And you were the fold-out
with
the bow.
Oh, yeah. That was the best thing ever.
That hung in my room until I was like 22 years old.
The trifold fold-out in a white bikini?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, I knew it. I know. Yeah, that was a great shot, wasn't it?
You're telling me.
No, we all right. Since we're getting this started properly, we posed a question to our fans. What was it, about a year ago? Your first wrestling experience with one of the females of professional wrestling, and I think Eddie and Matt both agreed that, what was it, the roller skating video?
There was like a montage video
that
like
that was when we did my bikini photo shoot down in South Beach in Miami, and we rented some skates and they had me skating up and down the sidewalk, and they ended up putting that in the video, and yeah, it was good stuff. That was fun.
Oh, believe me, Matt and Eddie talk about it as if it were only yesterday that they saw it for the first time. What an impression
well,
you have made.
Because they probably did see it yesterday, too. They probably see it every day.
You know, when I was...
Get him.
When I was home from school, sick, air quotes.
He's doing air quotes.
That was the, you know, when you were a young man, there was a game you would play when you were homesick. Try and break your record.
Oh, my God.
What? I'm not going to lie.
All right, so what was your record, like 18?
No, I wish. I'm not a machine.
Oh, then I have no use for you.
In a day? There was there were so many things.
Hey, listen. If I can do it, you can do it. Just 2 nights ago, I had 11 in one sitting.
Wow. Okay, but your mother wasn't like in and out of the house all day.
Which he might have gotten 12 if that was the case.
There were obstacle courses. It was like, hey, do you need anything? You don't feel good? I'm going to go get some medicine.
Yeah,
I was like,
drug
fair is like halfway across town, so I got like 6 minutes tops.
Did you ask for Vaseline and socks?
Then she comes home, she has to watch her soap operas, and it's like, oh, you're killing me. I need the VCR.
Oh, my God. The good old VCR.
Yeah, for those of you out there who don't know, that was
it's a tape machine.
Tape machine.
It's a prehistoric DVD player.
I still use my VCR.
Hey, you still got a Beta? Max?
Listen. What? What'd you call me?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just tuning in, we are here with the lovely Tammy Sitch, a.k.a. Sunny. If you want to call in, we're going to open up the phone lines. It's 201-467-8949, 201-467-8WIZ. If you don't want to call and you want to put your questions to Tammy on the Facebook page, it's facebook.com/shiningwizards. And we are here for the foreseeable future. I'll stay on all night.
Yeah, I'm sure Sunny
would love that.
I'll let you know when I'm tired, sick and tired of hearing your voices, so don't worry about it.
That won't take long.
Yeah.
So you're going to be down in Monroe Saturday at the Legends of the Ring convention, correct?
Yes, I will. It'll be my first appearance in, I think, like 2 years. So it's going to be a good one. 2 years or a year and a half? I don't know. I lose track of these things. But, yeah, I'll be there Saturday morning, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed at 9 a.m., signing autographs, doing photo ops, also at my table, because I always get my own table. I'm actually friends with a promoter. We went to high school together. So he always hooks me up with my own table. So at my table, a special guest at my table, because his vendor canceled on him, I'm allowing Marty Jannetty to come and sell pictures at my table.
Yeah, yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Love so Marty.
Come and see Marty hanging out at my table. Also, my little sister, she's an aspiring model. Her name is Juliana Fay. You can look her up on Facebook. She's gorgeous. She'll be there doing autographs and photo ops as well. Right next to me, so we can do group photo ops, is going to be the franchise Shane Douglas.
Nice. Very nice.
You can get some retro triple threat shots with us if you want.
Well, a question I have to ask you, and this also came up on a prior episode of our show, kind of just what happened with the whole spooning with Sunny pictures in bed thing? I was so looking forward to that. I know
Right.
a lot
well,
of people were.
It's still going to happen. This is what happened. See, 3 years ago, I was the first one to have the idea to do bikini photo ops, and I did it then in Charlotte at the NWA Fan Fest convention. And, of course, when I had that idea, people were saying, oh, my God, she's going to be in a bikini next to fans. What is she, a prostitute? So, of course, I got criticized. And when every other girl in the business realized how much of a moneymaker it was, you know, 10 of them started doing it. And then it was accepted by everybody. But so this time I said to myself, you know what, I got to one-up my bikini photo op idea. And, you know, I got to, you know, take it to the next level and, you know, do something else original. And I always think of original, brilliant ideas. And this is just another one. I mean, how many people out there that, you know, grew up watching me, I was the first crush, all that good nonsense, the first one, you know, you whacked off to and everything. How cool would it be? How cool would it be to have a photo like laying next to me in bed as if we're, you know, doing something? So, I mean, I thought of the idea. Everybody I pitched it to absolutely loved it. They said, you're a genius. This is great, blah, blah, blah. So I started advertising it, and oh, my God, what a shitstorm of negativity. It was driving me crazy. People are calling me a hooker, a prostitute, that I've resorted to prostitution. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's a 10-second photo op with two people fully clothed. What's the difference if we were laying side by side in a bed or sitting at a dinner table or poolside and I'm in a bikini or we're playing chess? It's a photo op. It doesn't matter what the set is. The set's just changing. There's no prostitution. There's no skin-to-skin touching. I actually did the photo op. What's that?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. I actually did the photo op out in L.A. a couple of weeks ago as like a trial run to see how it would go, and it was fabulous. We only had 8 fans do it. They were fans that were included in the special private luncheon that we had, and they all got, you know, the photo op. And they absolutely loved it. You have your choice of poses. You can either lay on your back with my head on your chest, or I lay on my side. You lay next to me with your arm around my waist. And you smile and, you know, say cheese. It's 10 seconds. It's harmless. I was wearing, you know, a robe with a push-up bra, so you saw some cleavage, but you didn't see any of the skin. And they were fully clothed. So it's like, how is there any kind of prostitution going on? It's ridiculous.
No, definitely. Did you find...
And believe me, if there was prostitution going on, I'd be charging a lot more than $75.
It's true. That's a very, very valid point. Actually, Tammy.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you find out in that trial run where they a lot of the fans? You know, you said there was only 8 of them. Were they pretty? Yeah. Were they well behaved? All eight of them respectful.
They were scared shitless to lay next to me. That they were shaking and frozen solid. So it's like there was no. It's not like they could possibly even grope me because they were, you know, scared shitless. They were literally frozen. So, because I kind of do intimidate some people that way, but you know, it was great, and they loved the pictures afterwards, and they said what a fun experience it was, and you know, it was a good time. So basically, you know, a couple months ago when I started advertising for it, and I had put pre-sales, you know, on sale online. Hold on 1 second. Oh, okay, I just got to keep checking my phone when it buzzes to see if it's the boyfriend. You know, what people were complaining about it, saying it was prostitution, and made, you know, worldwide news on all the websites, and a couple of people actually called the hotel, they called the Crown Plaza and complained that I was prostituting myself there, and the hotel told the promoter I wasn't allowed to do it.
That's so fucking wrong.
I know. So the promoter, since we went to high school together, we've known each other since we're 14, he said, listen, let's cool it off right now, take it off, you know, Facebook and everything like that, and then, like, right before the show, you know, we'll advertise it again and do what we can in either pre-sales or day of sales. So it's still going to happen, but, you know, we've just had to, you know, keep quiet about it for a little bit to let everything settle down.
Nice. I'm so looking forward to that. That really made...
And you know, think about it this way too. Even if I can't advertise it because people are being such fucking douchebags, you know, on Saturday, who's to say that, you know, I'm just not walking upstairs to my room with a couple of friends, you know, to show them whatever, or to, you know, or to let them use my bathroom, and there's nobody to say that I can't bring people upstairs to my room. There's nobody to say I can't. So everybody's keeping it quiet, and, you know, I'll handle it the morning of. If anybody's listening and they want to do it, come to me as soon as you get to the convention, and we'll probably go upstairs and do the shots between, like, 2 and 3.
Nice. Very nice. Tammy, we have a call if you want.
All the negativity.
We have a call coming in if you want to take it real quick.
Sure, what the hell.
Caller, you're on the air with Sonny. Who is this?
It's the Shiny Wizards.
Yes, it is. Who's calling?
I don't know if you guys remember me. Also, Blanco, what's up?
Mr. Phil Ditto, how are you, sir? You're on the phone with Sonny. Make sure you say hi to our guest.
Hey, Tammy, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you? What's your name?
I'm Phil. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Phil, nice to meet you. What's going on with you tonight?
Working. What else is new? Story of my life.
Working. What do you do?
I work to be. I'm a police officer in the city.
Ah, you're a police officer. Oh, my ex was a Jersey City cop.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, we were together 6 years, so I know everything about police work. Too much, actually.
Yeah, it's strenuous. Trust me, it is. I figure I'm on real break. I says, let me see if I can actually get on the air and call in. It'll be great.
What do you work? Do you work mids or evenings?
I work afternoons and evenings.
Oh, okay. He worked midnight, steady midnight, so.
I'm going to work.
Brutal. But for Jersey City, that was a lot better than evenings, because evenings when all the shit went down, at least, you know, midnight's half the town was asleep, so it's okay. All right, since this is supposed to be you asking me a question, why don't we go with that?
Thank you.
We're just talking about police work now.
Oh, my God. Tell me about it. What type of question did I ask you? Are you still doing the under the covers at the Legend of the Ring?
Phil,
aren't
we just talked about
to
this.
Our show?
We just talked about this, Phil.
I have no way of doing it on my phone. My phone is garbage.
Sounds like you need a few more hours
just,
at the precinct.
We just discussed that for like 10 minutes.
all right. So I guess I missed that one. Oh well.
Yeah, we're still going to be doing it. If you go to the convention, just come over to my table as early as you get there. I'll be there at 9 a.m. I'm probably going to sell some pre-sales over this next coming week up until then, and then they'll be sold the morning of, and the shots will be done between 2 and 3 p.m.
It's amazing when you sit down and you read all these asinine comments that people are making. People don't realize that grow up, like myself, watching Raw Wrestling, and you got beautiful young ladies like you. This is like an affordable opportunity to live out a dream. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. It's just a fantasy photo op. And, you know, I mean, we were just talking about this, you know, a minute ago, saying, like, people were saying I was prostituting myself. How am I prostituting myself by taking a 10-minute photo next to somebody, whether it be poolside in a bikini or at a dinner table holding hands or, you know, over a candlelight dinner? It's just a setup. It's a fantasy scene. You know, that's all it is.
Exactly. So, it's just good, clean fun. That's all it is.
Good, clean fun.
Exactly.
How you? It's not like you're sleeping with the people, for God's sake. That would cost a lot more money.
Exactly. Everybody's fully clothed. There's no skin-to-skin contact, and it's a 10-second deal. So, you know, they all have to get over it. That's all.
Exactly. And like
I just said, if I was prostituting myself, I'd be charging a lot more than $75 a pop.
And I would have to be working a lot of overtime for that.
Phil, thanks for calling in. I'll get back to work.
Take care, Phil. Be safe.
Be safe, buddy.
Thank you. It's a pleasure talking to everyone.
Love you.
I'll see everyone Legends of the Ring on Saturday. You guys going to be there?
Cool.
Yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah, they'll all be there.
I'll be stopping at your table, guys.
They're all going to be there rubbing my feet. They're my slave boys now.
Nice. don't make promises.
And
don't make promises.
I'm actually going to wear a little schoolgirl's outfit on Saturday, too, so we're going to fulfill some other fantasies there.
There you go.
Boy, that Phil likes to talk, huh?
All right, what's question number two from caller number two? Is about the undercover photo op?
Yeah.
Yes.
The show's actually an hour long of talking about the same thing in 10-minute intervals.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah.
We've got nothing else.
You should just get like a reel together of our conversation, just talking about it, and then when somebody asks, just hit play.
Yeah,
it'll be a lot easier.
So, Tammy, let me ask you. There's been a lot in the news lately about your personal life, and I know that you've taken to Facebook a few times, and you know, pretty much telling people in not so few words just to mind their own business. How's everything with you these days?
How's everything with you?
Yeah, how's everything with you?
Everything couldn't be better.
Awesome.
My life right now is so amazing and so perfect, and I'm so blessed to have it all. I mean, I always say that everything happens for a reason, and I think the past year of my life was just a huge test. I think, you know, God or some kind of higher being or something, you know, put me through all that just to see if I could come out a stronger person, and I did. I don't know why, but I'm one of the most resilient people on the face of the earth. I mean, I go to jail for 4 months, I come back stronger. I get diagnosed with cancer, I come back stronger. I mean, I've gone through 3 traumatic deaths in my life, my father, my niece, and Chris, and I come back stronger. So it's like, I always think of, you know, everything's just a test to see, you know, what I can handle, and, you know, maybe finally one day down the line I'll get a reward for it. But everything happens for a reason. Like, the whole jail thing, people are like, oh, my God, hush, hush. She's, you know, she went to jail. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm really not ashamed of it. That's why I talk about it openly. It's really, to me, it's not a big deal. I made it through 114 days in a state women's prison, and I came out stronger than I was before. And I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm actually really grateful I went for a few reasons. Well, the whole reason I went basically is because I found out that my ex-fiance had cheated on me, so I beat the shit out of him. So that's basically what happened. A lot of the stories in the news were saying, oh, Tammy was just an alcoholic and she drank and attacked him. No, what you don't know is, because I got out of rehab and I was sober, and when I found out that he cheated on me repeatedly with his ex-girlfriend, I relapsed, had a couple of drinks, and when he came home from work, I beat the crap out of him and choked him unconscious in 30 seconds.
Sounds like a night at my house.
Seriously, can you blame me though? I mean, any woman out there, if they found out their you know, newly engaged fiance has been cheating on him with his ex-girlfriend, anybody would rage like that, you know? So, I mean, all the stories out there is just, oh, she drank and attacked him violently, but they don't say what the catalyst was. The catalyst was I found out he cheated. So, I mean, what are you going to do? So am I ashamed of that? Absolutely not. You know, I stood up for myself, and, I mean, with the amount of times that he slapped me prior to that, he just had this coming to him. He really did. You know, I beat the crap out of him. And with the whole violation of the protective orders over and over and over again, what people think is I was stalking him and kept going back to the apartment and stalking him and trying to get back into his life. No, I kept moving out. And every single time I went back, it's because he begged me to come home. On the final arrest, because I did 3 months in a long-term inpatient rehab for alcohol, because we convinced the judge that I didn't beat him up, you know, just because I'm a violent person. We said that, you know, alcohol was involved and da-da-da in order to get me to avoid jail time and go into rehab instead. The court agreed. So I went out to rehab out in Pennsylvania, and my mom had actually hired a moving company to get all my stuff out of his place, moved it into her basement. The first month I was out there in rehab, it was October to November, everything was great. All of a sudden, he started sending flowers, chocolate-covered strawberries, letters, and making phone calls to rehab to talk to me, begging me to forgive him, he'll never cheat again, please, 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 I'm so sorry, I'm a changed person. He even said he tried to kill himself by taking a half a bottle of Xanax because the thought of living without me was too much to bear. So over to the last 2 months of that rehab, he basically brainwashed me into thinking, okay, he loves me. He apologizes for the cheating. I know he'll never do it again. I'll give him my trust again. I'll go back. So January 4th, he buys me a train ticket to go from Reading, Pennsylvania, up all the way up to New Haven, where we lived. He picked me up at the New Haven train station. This is January 4th, brought me home to the apartment. 2 days later, January 6th, he puts a ring on my finger and asks me to marry him. 3 days later, we go to court, and he begs the judge to please lift the protective order. We want to go on with our lives. He's like, I want to marry her. I love her. We want to go back to normal. The judge says, you know what, let's give it one more month to make sure everything's okay. But she lifted the protective order from a full protective order to a limited protective order, which means we could have contact, but we still couldn't live together until it was lifted completely. All right, fine. We're one step in the right direction. The very next day, he rents a budget truck from Budget Rental Car in his name, on his credit card, drives to New Jersey, to my mom's house, packs up all my stuff, and moves me back into Connecticut. So everything's great for the month of January. We paint the apartment all new colors. We get all new furniture. We figure, all right, let's make a fresh start of this. Let's start all over again. Everything's great for that 20 days. January 25th comes around, and the ex-girlfriend that he cheated with starts coming back into the picture with multiple text messages, emails, and Facebook messages, and tweets. So he comes home from work. We get in an argument about it in the kitchen because I had asked him to block her from everything because I wanted her out of our lives. We get in an argument about it in the kitchen. Now, he's such a pussy, he can't argue like a grown adult. So he punched me in the ribs, dropped me to the floor. And I don't know if you've ever had broken ribs or not, but when you have a broken rib, you can't even breathe. It's painful. So I'm laying on the floor holding my side and gasping for air. I'm like, oh, my God, he just broke my ribs. He looked down at me, and second he realized, uh-oh, I hurt her, he left the apartment. He went to the police station and said, she's in my apartment and she's not supposed to be there. Go pick her up.
Oh, my God.
So basically, he realized he was going to get an assault charge for breaking my ribs. So he got me arrested first for a violation of the protective order, even though he's the motherfucker who lured me back in, begged me to come home, moved me back in, and put a goddamn ring on my finger 20 days earlier.
I don't know what to say.
I swear to you on my father's grave, on my niece's grave, and on Christopher's grave, this is play-by-play exactly what happened. So when I go to court the next morning, the judge is like, this is your fifth violation of the protective order. He's like, I can't let you go. He put a $100,000 cash bond on me, which means you can't even use a bondsman. You have to come up with $100,000 cash. And I'm like, all right, that's not going to happen, so I guess I'm going to jail. So I figured I would just have to wait in jail 20 days until my court date. Well, court date comes around. I had to change lawyers four times, so every time we went back to court, it's with a new lawyer, and they have to get the discovery and another continuance. So 114 days went by. I finally am going into court with my fifth lawyer because a week prior to my court date, my lawyer just so happens to have a massive heart attack and quadruple bypass surgery.
Jesus.
So I'm going in again with a new lawyer, and I'm presenting my lawyer. She's got to get the discovery and a continuance, and the judge, who just so happens to be the older black lady judge that he begged to lift the protective order in front of, she goes, wait a minute. How many days have you been here? And I said, 114, ma'am. She's like, I want to talk to you in my quarters. She pulls me into the judge's chambers, and she's like, tell me step by step what has happened here. And I told her everything that has happened from day one when I found about him cheating, me relapsing, kicking his ass, and then all the subsequent violations of the protective orders and arrests. That, you know, every single time he was begging me, come home. And I said, ma'am, I said, this is not me stalking him. This is not me trying to get back into his life. This is basically his manipulation, and I fell for it. I said, and this last time, it was all because he wanted to avoid an assault charge because he had just broken my ribs. She goes, do you have proof he broke your ribs? I said, yes. The night I got arrested, I had them take me to the hospital, and I have x-rays proving my 9th and 10th ribs were broken. I said, so it's absolutely ridiculous that I've been sitting here for so long. She goes, you know what? She goes, if he didn't beg me less than a month ago, well, no, I'm sorry, 4 months ago, to lift that protective order right in front of my face in my courtroom, you know, I might have a different way of thinking about what you're telling me. She goes, but I see he's a sociopath, and I believe you. She goes, you're going home today. She let me out.
Yeah, but, I mean, the broken ribs, nothing happened at that point? That's just insanity.
Well, when I was in the police station, when I came back from the hospital, I said I want to file a criminal complaint about him. I showed them, you know, the hospital report saying I had the two broken ribs. They photographed me because I had bruises on my ribs. I had a bruise on my lip, and I had fingerprint bruises on my neck from him choking and slapping me. And I also had a bruise on my hip. So they took pictures. I gave a 3-page written statement. I had even swore on the Bible before I wrote it, all that good stuff. And while I was in jail, I found out 3 weeks later that they did investigate it, but somehow he convinced them, quote unquote, that I fell on the ice in a drunken stupor and broke my own ribs. Now, first of all, when I went to the hospital and they did blood work, they showed that there was no alcohol in my system whatsoever. Secondly, if I fell on the ice and broke my own ribs, how did I get the bruise on my neck and on my lip? Had that happen? Did the ice do that too? Did the ice smack me? Did the ice choke me? I don't think so. So eventually, I don't know what happened, but they investigated, but he never got charged with it. So I got screwed there too.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. So this judge was just like, this is ridiculous that you're in there this long because this guy basically fucked with you. I said, exactly. So she said, I'm not continuing this. Your lawyer doesn't need the discovery. I'm letting you go home today. So I wasn't even sentenced. I never got probation or parole because I wasn't sentenced, and I went home.
Thank God. That was it. It's unfortunate that you had
to... Let me tell you, though, it was the best 114 days I've ever had.
We'll get into that in a second. I just want to take another caller. Somebody's actually calling in. Caller, you're on the air with the Shining Wizards and our guest, Sonny. Who's calling?
Hey, it's Phil Sobrato again. I still got some time left. I got no more question I want to ask now.
Are you kidding me?
What's that?
I should hang up on you on principle.
What's that?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Well, hey, maybe if he pulls you over, he'll let you off his speeding ticket, so hush.
All right, so my question is, a very good question. What do you think about the current status of the women's division in the WWE?
Honestly, I don't watch the show.
Okay.
Honest to God.
Thank you,
so
Phil.
I really don't. The only time I ever watch the WWE is if when they call me to go back for an appearance, I'll watch like the previous 3 weeks of Raw just so I know who's working there and who's not, so I don't act like an idiot when I go and work. But I honestly have no idea who's even there. I don't know who's the champion. I don't know anything. So I couldn't even answer that.
I was just curious. It's just the way the women's division is today. It's a shambles. I'm sorry for saying it. It's a shambles.
Right. I don't doubt it. I believe you.
Phil, don't you have some...
If they honestly should get rid of that Divas title and bring back the women's title, they have to. It's ridiculous.
The show. Why is it ridiculous?
What's that?
Why is it ridiculous?
I think the women's title holds more prominence than a Divas title.
Right. No, I think they only did that... Honestly, I think they only did that because they have given the women the name brand Diva.
I see.
All right.
I don't think it's a lesser title as if like world champion and intercontinental champion. I just believe it's just they changed the name because of they copyrighted the brand name. I think that's all it is.
It's all money, Phil. You know that.
That's the question I want to answer. I'm sorry, I couldn't think before.
It's okay, Phil. Go stop a motorcycle gang from beating up a father driving his SUV.
Yeah, and pull your pants off.
I read about that in the paper. That is nuts.
We can do this all night. Ladies and gentlemen, we're on with Phil Ditto, and Sonny, do you have any questions for Phil?
So what do you think of the Divas division?
Oh, my goodness.
Think of the undercover photo shoot?
Oh, my God, I had to hang up on him. I'm sorry. He'll go for hours. Phil,
hey,
we love you.
Listen,
but...
don't be making fun of our law enforcement out there. Come on.
Wait. Oh, no, I love our boys in blue.
He's calling back.
That makes one of us.
Fair enough. But so all right now, all is good with Sonny. Now everything is perfect. Everything is great.
Yeah, everything's really good right now.
Well, that's good because we'll go to another call.
Phil, how are you?
No, it is Phil. I'm hanging up on him.
Jesus,
Phil, stop calling back. No, there's another call coming in. Oh, brother, he's killing me over here. We have a fresh call, I promise. Caller, you're on the air with the Shining Wizards and Sonny. Who's this?
Who's this?
Yeah, what's with the question with the question?
That's how Bonesaw does things.
Oh shit!
Wow, Bonesaw!
Ladies and gentlemen, you're Pro Wrestling Syndicate World Champion. How's it going,
world
buddy?
Champion.
Bonesaw?
Yes.
Oh, you're on the line with Sonny.
Hi, Bonesaw. Oh. What's going on?
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Doing all right. You having a good time with the Wizards over there?
Oh, we're having a ball. We're having a great time right now. I'm getting a foot rub as we speak. One of them's braiding my hair. It's fabulous.
Matt's the one braiding the hair because he knows how to do that.
Well, I request a hair braid the next time I visit you guys.
Hey, that's great. Do you have a question?
I didn't know I was supposed to be calling a question. I just can't call and say hi to my friends.
Oh my god.
This is how professional we are here, Tammy.
I see that. This is great. This is fantastic.
all I see is on Facebook, call in now with a number. So I say, okay, and I call in. Now I all of a sudden have a question ready.
We're on the phone with...
Maybe they should have been more descript on their status there.
WWE Hall of Famer Sonny is on the Shining Wizards.
That's right, I do remember reading that now.
Oh my God, Jesus!
Oh,
I really thought
God.
Phil was the
and
worst
what
caller.
What have you been smoking all night, sir?
Well, nothing tonight.
Tonight.
Just some meat, okay. Right, buddy?
No, I have to go to the gym later, so that can hold off.
Jim, what's his last name?
Oh
my God!
All right,
We
thanks, Bonesaw.
Yeah, Bonesaw.
I guess I'm irrelevant since I don't have a question for you guys, so I'll just wait until next week when I don't need a question to call in.
He's so butthurt. All right, Bonesaw, we're gonna let you go.
All right.
Later, brother.
I have to apologize. I don't know what happened tonight.
Bonesaw was not ready.
What in the world is going on with you guys?
How much time do you actually have for us to explain it to you?
Jesus. What time is it now?
Who cares, Matt?
So you mentioned before that when Phil called and he mentioned the WWE women's division and that you watch Raw prior to going back. Were you surprised when they made the phone call to induct you into the WWE Hall of Fame?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was crazy. It was January 10th. It was a Monday night at 9:30. And I got a text message from Johnny Ace, and he says, "Hey, can we talk?" And I said, "Sure, when?" He goes, "Now." I said, "All right." And Johnny and I have been friends since 1995, and, you know, we always talked on a regular basis, so it was, you know, no big deal. But then I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, he's at Monday Night Raw right now, and it's 9:30 at night. Why the hell does he want to talk to me now? So I called him, and we just start, like, bullshitting about nothing. We were talking about the weather. I was actually packing for a trip to Mexico that following morning. I was going on vacation. So, you know, I was telling him about my vacation and where I was going to stay and blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Johnny Ace has never called me just to bullshit and just to talk. And I've been on the phone with the guy for, like, 15 minutes already. I'm like, what is going on? So he says, "So I saw you watching Raw." I said, "Well, actually, I have it on in the other room, but I'm not watching it since I'm packing. I'm, like, running around the house." He's like, "Well, go sit down and watch it right now." I said, "All right." So I go into the living room and sat down, and just as I sat down and looked up at the TV, they started doing the announcement that Sean was getting inducted. So I watched the whole video package, you know, while I'm still on the phone. I said, "Oh, my God, that's great. You know, if anybody deserves it, you know, it's him." I mean, not only did I, you know, have a relationship with him for about 9 months, but I've always said I think he's the greatest performer to ever step in the ring. So I said, "You know, fabulous. That's wonderful for him. I'm really happy for him." And he goes, "Well, let me tell you why I called." I said, "Oh, finally, let's get on with this phone call." He's like, "Vince and I have decided that we want you to be the second inductee." And I paused and I went, "You're fucking ribbing me, right?" That was my response. I said, "You're fucking ribbing me, right?" He goes, "No, Tam, we're not ribbing you." I went, "Oh, my God." And I just started crying. I just lost it. And I don't cry. Like, I don't cry for funerals. I don't cry for sad movies. Like, I'm so thick-skinned, it's ridiculous. And I started crying. And then I stopped crying, and I said, "Wait a minute." So I started giving him every excuse why not to induct me. I said, "Don't you think I'm still too young? Don't you think I still have stuff to do in the business? Don't, you know?" I'm trying to give him every excuse, and he's like, "No, we think it's time, and we want to induct you this year." I was like, "Oh, my God." So then I start freaking out, and I'm so excited. He goes, "But listen, you can't tell anybody except for your boyfriend until we announce it on TV. We need it to be really hush-hush." I'm like, "Okay, that's no problem at all." So I hang up the phone with him, and I'm like, "Oh, my God, I have to tell somebody. Who can I tell?" Because my boyfriend was at his martial arts classes. He trained MMA. And I know he never brings a phone into the MMA school. He always leaves it in the car. I'm like, "Shit, I can't even tell the one person I'm allowed to tell." So I'm like running around the house with my cell phone in my hand, about to explode because I just need to tell somebody. I actually called my photographer, Bob Mulrennan, and I told him because I knew he would, you know, not say a word. But, and then I figured, you know, they'll probably announce it next week or the week after, and then I can just, you know, let it all out to the world. Those bastards made me wait 2 months before I could actually tell anybody about it. They told me on January 10th my announcement was until March 7th. I thought I was going to die.
What were they waiting for?
I don't know, because I was the second one they chose to be in it, and I was the second to last announced. It made no sense. I have a feeling they were testing me to see if I could, you know, keep my big mouth shut.
Well, that's the interesting thing. There's the two schools of thought that I heard about you being inducted. One, that it was actually long overdue because mm-hmm. you honestly were the original diva that sparked it all. And right. Two, that you are too young, and maybe people were holding out possibility of a comeback, because when you did come back, you looked fantastic, and you could have held your own with just about any diva that was on the current roster.
Right.
So was that something that you think possibly, or maybe it was your absence from major television roles for a long time, that maybe it was overdue, or do you think it was timed right, or?
I actually thought it might have been too early. I always had in the back of my head that one day I'd get inducted. I'm not saying I was sure I'd get inducted, but I had a good feeling that one day, but I had no idea it would happen that soon. I really didn't. I was thinking, like, if I had to pick a date, I'd say 2020. You know, I figured, you know, when I'm 50 or dead, just like everybody else. You know? But, you know, I really had no idea. That's why I was so shocked. I was really, really shocked. And I don't know. Like when I went, I got in mad shape for that. I just busted my ass in the gym doing doubles every day. I started doing Muay Thai kickboxing to get my arms in shape and get better cardio. And I dieted my ass off. And I had, I had 3 months to prepare. And I killed myself to getting ready for that. And I think I was in better shape for that than I was when, I was on TV full time. So when I went back, everybody was like, oh my God, you look so great. You're so skinny. Your arms look so great. So, I was really happy. And I did talk to them a couple of times about possibly coming back. But I basically said to them, I said, I really don't want to go on the road full time. I really don't. I said, if there's something you could do with me that it's just pay-per-views and TVs, great. But I really, I've been on the road. I've been there, done that. And I went for so many years without having a family Christmas or a family Thanksgiving or, birthdays with people. And, at the time when I was on the road, I had this big, beautiful house I just bought that I never saw. I never saw my pets. I never saw my friends. And, I did that. I've been there. I really didn't want to go out on the road full time again. So, they said, when they had an idea, they'd let me know. But, everything that I guess came up with them, they would need me on the road. And I just kind of wasn't willing to do that. And, I'm not upset that I haven't gone back because, like I said, everything happens for a reason. There must be a reason why I haven't gone back. But, it's all good with me. And you never know. Down the road, there could be something that, they might call me up and say, hey, you're perfect for this. Let's do it. You don't know. Anything can happen in that company.
Now, you mentioned being 50 or dead and then exercising kind in the same breath. How do you feel about the DDP yoga? I feel like I read somewhere that you were involved in that way at the beginning.
No, not involved in it at all. I'm actually thinking of getting the DVDs and trying it out because I do yoga every morning myself. I do it in my gym. My training sessions are incredible. I go there, I do cardio, then I lift, then I do abs, then I do more cardio, and then I do yoga, and then I tan. I'm there for 4 hours a day. So it's kind of crazy. But I did an interview not too long ago where when I was working in WCW, like Paige got hit, like his ass handed to him all the time because people would make such fun of him. At all the nitros and on the house shows, he would go out before the show, roll out his yoga mat right between the guardrail and the ring, and do his yoga like all afternoon. And just like in the middle of nowhere, just he would plop his mat down and just do his yoga. And the boys used to just rip him apart and make so much fun of him for doing it. And he swore by it. He told everybody, guys, you should do it with me. He used to try to get some of the guys out there to do it with him. And everybody just laughed it off. And look what he did. He turned it into some yoga empire. You know what I mean? It's insane what he turned it into. And there's a lot of people that I know have done his yoga workouts and got all their DVDs, and they've made drastic changes in their body. I mean, they've lost a tremendous amount of weight. They've built muscle. They've gotten lean. I've seen the transformation, and it's just been unbelievable what I've seen. So I was actually thinking of, trying his DVDs. It's worth it. Maybe he'll give me a discount because there's like $60. But, I figured, if it's working for some people, it must be legit. So, good for him. And, he found another venue to get his name out there and make some money, and I'm all supportive of it.
I'm sure if you talk to him about it, he'd be happy to hook you up with a set. I mean, Matt and I have been doing it. I've been doing it a little over a year now, and I know Matt's been doing it, at least like 6-7 months?
Mm-hmm.
And the results you get in such, it's so fast. Like, you just start losing weight, getting in shape, putting on lean muscle. It's unbelievable. It's definitely a program you want to check out.
Yeah. Sonny, I know a few people that have done it, and they look fantastic, so.
Sorry to interrupt again. We do have another caller. You're on the line with the Shining Wizards and Sonny. Who's this?
Hey, this is Remy. What's going on, guys?
Hey.
Remy. Remy Blue?
Remy?
You know.
Of course we know.
What's up, Remy?
Hey, great to finally talk to you, Sonny. You just for the record, I'm not just saying this because you're on live, but you were and still are my favorite WWE diva.
Oh, thank you so much. How old are you?
I am actually, you're going to make me say, oh, geez. I'm 30. Go ahead.
You're 30? Yeah, that's the age. That's the age. So when I was 22 and on TV, you were 12 and, doing your thing to my pictures, weren't you?
No.
No?
Why did I know that?
It's okay. I said I do, Remy, so you're good.
Notice he said do and not did.
Did you, are you calling from a well?
Yeah. Is your name Timmy O'Toole?
He's in a tunnel right now.
Matt's just losing his shit. He's having a grand old time tonight.
Remy, what's your question for Sonny here?
I actually had one. If I noticed that, you were more of a manager, a great one, by all means. You managed, I believe, three or four or five tag team champions, and I think.
Three tag team champions.
Boom.
Oh, there were three. I thought it was more. And of course, you managed Chris Candido, who was another great athlete in ECW as well.
Mm-hmm.
But,
right.
I've noticed that I've never seen you wrestle. If you had a chance, if you could do it all over again as a wrestler, which task WWE Diva or current WWE Diva would you have liked to face in the ring one on one?
Wait, say that again a little bit clearer because I can barely hear him.
I think he's asking you if you actually had an in-ring career where you actually worked, who would you like to have faced, either current or past?
Nobody. I don't like being in the ring. I mean, seriously, think about it. I mean, I'm not a wrestler. I never said I was. I never said I was any good at it because I'm not. So the half a dozen times that I've actually been in the ring, you know, I did what I could. But wrestling's not my thing. You know, my strengths are give me a microphone and I can talk for hours. You know, put me in front of a camera with a mic and I'm good to go. Put me in the ring and it's like, why do that? And that's not my strength. Like WCW, they never let me talk on the mic, but they had me wrestle matches. I'm like, what the fuck? How bad, you know, ass backwards can you be? So, you know, but if I had to, let's say I was a wrestler, let's say I was a little bit good at it, you know, I would have to say I would have loved to work with Trish. She's a very good friend of mine, and we get along like two peas in a pod, so that would have been a blast.
Good answer.
I'm trying to think of who else. Well, let's go by generations. If it was in the 80s or early 90s, I would say, no, 80s. If it was in the 80s, I would say I'd like to work a program with Wendy Richter. If it was in the 90s, I would have to say, well, I would have to say maybe early on Medusa, later on Trish, and let's say early 2000s. Shit, I don't even know who's there in the early 2000s. I haven't even watched.
Well,
I don't know.
Was Lita still around at that point?
Yeah, I think Lita and Trish were both still
Lita,
there.
Yeah, Lita and Trish were around that
time.
Like sure. I would love to work with them, but, you know, they're much more technologically advanced than I am in the ring, so I'd have to, you know, learn a lot. But if I could just get by with fluff, you know, I'd do it. But you know, I don't know. It's hard to say who I'd like to work with because, like I said, that's not my thing. My job isn't to be a wrestler.
And now, you mentioned before with that caller, you were 22 when you were, I guess, in your prime, or
yeah,
I don't know if
you... I was 21 when I got hired, yeah.
21 when you got hired, 22, 23. What's it like for someone so young to have such a major impact and basically shape an entire, I guess, section, or basically a whole perception of a woman in wrestling, and in just make that major impact on a business, a multi-million dollar business?
It was crazy. I mean, honestly, I wish it would have happened when I was a little older, to be honest with you, because when you're 21 years old and you're making that much money and you're, you know, all over the world and you're this huge star. I mean, cause people used to, like, make me the equivalent of Shawn Michaels at the time. Like, Shawn and I were, like, the top people in the company. And that's another reason why we hooked up and started dating, because we were like, why not? Top girl, top guy. You know, makes sense. But I honestly wish it would have happened a little bit later in my life, because when you're 21 and, you, like I said, you're making that money, you're on top of the world, it does go to your head, and you're very irresponsible with it. I used to buy shoes $400 a pair, and if they were under $400, they were shit, so I wouldn't buy them. Like, you know, it was ridiculous how much frivolous money I spent on nonsense, and then I would have nothing to show for it. So I don't think I was mature enough emotionally or mentally to handle the finances and to handle the actual, like, star quality of it, because it does go to your head. It goes to anybody's head when you get it that young and you really don't know how to deal with it and don't know how to handle it. So I do wish maybe if I started at 24, 25, I could have handled it a little bit more mature and a little bit better way. So because I did make some foolish mistakes when I was that young.
We have another caller on the line. Caller, you're on the line with the Shining Wizards and Sonny. Who's this?
Hi, who's this? Is this Tony?
Oh, it's Tickles.
Hi, everybody.
Tickle
How's
me
everybody
Elmo?
Going today?
Tickles.
Tickle me Elmo? Fabulous.
Oh, yeah, I'll tickle you all night long. Sonny, I'm a huge fan of yours. How are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you, darling?
Oh, my God, this is just... This is
oh, my
crazy.
God,
I'm
know.
I'm shaking.
I'm shaking, too. We're shaking by Getty Money.
Nice, an Eddie Money reference.
Quiver, but the women, Jesus. I have two quick questions for you. First off, Sonny,
okay, shoot.
What is your opinion on gay marriage?
Well, I have a gay cousin, and he's been with his partner for about 20 years, so, you know, whatever floats your boat.
So you support it?
Sure. I totally believe that if two people want to be together, they should be allowed to be together and be happy.
That's great news. And my second question is just a generic question. How is Sunny these days, and what are you up to?
I am just freaking fabulous. I'm in the editing stage of my book. I'm actually going through all the edits that my editor sent back to me. And then just, you know, any day now it'll go into print. And hopefully we can have it on sale by Christmas, if not January or February. We're doing the best we can to get it out there.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to read it. Sunny, it's so great to talk to you. You look beautiful as always. And I really
thank
wish you
so much.
Take care.
Thank
have a good
you
night.
So much.
Bye, sweetheart.
Bye.
Thank you, Tickles.
Thanks, Tickles. Oh, my Lord. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real person.
Is it really?
Yeah, he actually calls the show quite a bit.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Now, he was actually very tame.
I was expecting the worst when I saw that it was Tickles.
Oh, man.
How did that apple crisp come out that you were making?
Oh, apple crisp. I haven't tried it yet, but it smells delicious.
Apple crisp. I was looking at the pork one that you made the other day, too.
Oh, my pulled pork? Yeah, I had to make that for a party. I went to a psychic medium party the other night at my doctor's house. So I made a pulled pork, and I made German chocolate cream cheese swirl brownies.
Wait. You just overshot that. Psychic medium house? Please talk to us. You can't just drop that casually and just keep going about your chocolate.
My doctor had a party with a bunch of her girlfriends, and you know my doctor's a friend of mine. So she invited us girls over, and we all brought food, and we hung out all night and got free massages from a masseuse. And she had a psychic medium there to give us all readings. So that, it was fun.
And you brought all the food. That's awesome.
Well, I brought the pulled pork, homemade coleslaw, and my brownies, my special brownies. So.
Listen, I'll have psychic medium parties every night of the week if you come to my house and bring food.
Absolutely. Whatever you need.
Shining Wizards.
But it was fun. I mean, I don't really, this medium that she had, it didn't buy everything. She said, I've been to psychic mediums before that have been right on. But this one, she said a couple of things that were good and a couple of things I was like, yeah, okay, honey, whatever. But it was fun. And then she had a massage therapist there giving us all free massages. So it was a nice night.
What a night. Eating food with Sunny, getting psychic readings and massages. Sign me up.
Yeah. At my doctor's house, but no prescriptions involved.
Boo. Caller, you're on the line with the Shining Wizards and the beautiful Tammy Sitch. Who is this?
Hi, my name is Jim.
Jim.
Hey, Jim. What's going on?
Hi, Tammy. How are you? It's an absolute honor to talk to you. I've been a big fan
of
yours.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, too, Big Jim.
Big Jim.
Big Jim. I like that.
Jim, what's your question for Sunny?
You just referenced your book, which you're working on. Has there been any talk with WWE about a potential DVDs about your career now, especially that they own the rights to, you know, ECW, WCW?
Right. Not as of yet, but every time I'm there at WrestleMania, wait, hang on a second. Oh, okay, I'm going to have to answer this text on this after this call. It's the boyfriend. No, you know, there hasn't been any talk yet, but every time I'm at WrestleMania every year, they always pull me aside and film like a 3-hour interview with me. So they have stuff on tape. You know, they ask me everything about my career and about, you know, every company I worked for and everything like that. So they do have footage, you know, in their possession that they can, you know, put together, edit together and make a DVD at any time. So you never know. I mean, it could be possible, but I haven't heard of anything, you know, in the plans to do anything yet. I mean, but you never know. But they do have a lot of footage of interviewing me over the last, like, 3 years. I think I started doing them at WrestleMania 25 4 years ago. Okay, so they have, like, 4 years, with the exception of this past WrestleMania. They said that they have 3 years' worth of interviews that they've done with me for that purpose. But I haven't been told about, you know, them putting anything together yet. But you never know.
Well, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, from, you know, the most downloaded celebrity on America Online. You know, your career. And, you know, these days they're turning out a new DVD every month or so. I think that you're really the one that they're missing, and I think it would sell extraordinarily well. So,
well, I think what they should do, I really think they should do another interview at, you know, next year's WrestleMania, because there's so much more to talk about now about my life, with, you know, the arrests and jail and my cancer diagnosis and my surgery and everything like that. So, you know, maybe they're waiting to, you know, get some more good information on film and then put it together. You never know. But I think maybe after the book they'll take advantage of it and, you know, make some cash on it.
Right. Well, I look forward to purchasing many copies for gifts and all that stuff.
Oh, fabulous. I'm trying to have it out by Christmas so it can be a, you know, perfect Christmas present, Hanukkah present for everybody, but I'm working on it. My editor was a little delayed in getting it all edited, so I'm a little backed up, but I'm working my ass off to get it done.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jim. Keep your hammer wet, buddy.
Okay, you guys, talk amongst yourself for 20 seconds so I can return this text to my boyfriend.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
No problem. Hold on.
Hey, you know, we got a call coming in. We should just talk. You know what, Kevin, you want to pretend you're Sonny?
Okay.
All right. Caller, you're on the line with the Shining Wizards and Sonny. Who's this?
Oh, hello. First time calling. My name is Eric.
Oh, hey, Eric. How's it going? Sonny, you want to say hi to Eric?
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Eric. Hang on. I'm so funny.
Oh, no.
I can hear you, though.
Eric, I'm sorry. We were trying to trick you. I guess
Eric, hold that thought for about 15 seconds. Sonny will be,
1 second,
Sonny will be right back with us. But more importantly, how are you, Eric?
I'm doing fine. I'm a long-time wrestling fan. I watch TNA. I do watch Raw, but I grew up watching Sonny when, you know, when she first came out and started out. I think I have an old Raw magazine in my room with her on the cover.
Yeah. We just talked about that.
Are the pages stuck together, sir?
No, sir. No, it's not like that, you know.
Like me that much if those pages aren't stuck together.
No, I like you. I'm saying I'm not a pervert. I'm just no...
Like me, but you're just respectful of the fact that you don't want to... spray your love juice all over my photos.
I apologize, Sonny. That's not usually our target demographic.
Right, I said yeah. Target.
That's real funny. I'm saying I respect what you've done in the business as a, you know, being a blueprint of a diva. Now,
thank you.
My question for you is, like, you ever thought about getting into acting? I think it'd be good maybe in a comedy or an action movie or something, you know.
Ah, awesome. Awesome idea. I like that.
Okay.
Was there a question? Did I miss the question?
Well, I guess it was.
You asked the question. Yeah, I was wondering if you ever thought about getting acting or, you know, maybe like a sitcom TV show or something.
Oh, well, back in the late 90s and early 2000s, I used to actually had an agent in Los Angeles, and I would go out every month for like a four-day weekend and do some readings and auditions and stuff like that. I actually made 3 callbacks to do Baywatch Hawaii. So I was at the final callback, and when they sat me down and told me about the salary and everything like that, they said I would have to move to Hawaii, no problem. But then they said they only pay $50,000 a season. And I was still with the WWF, so I was like, wait a minute. I make a lot more than that at my current job. I'm not going to quit it to do Baywatch for $50,000. So I actually turned that down. But I did a bunch of auditions for Mortal Kombat and a few other things. But, you know, I was on the road full-time as well, so there was only so much I could do. But, you know, it's always a possibility down the road because I do love being in front of the camera. But what I actually am thinking of doing, I'm thinking of getting a mock reel together and sending it out to national and local markets to do some straight broadcasting. I'm thinking of straight news, Hollywood gossip shows, sports, who knows, you know. But I love the whole broadcasting aspect of it. And I think I'm good at it, so I think I might try that route to see what I can do.
Okay, yeah, that'd be cool. Well, Sonny,
I mean, my like dream job would be like backstage interviewer for the UFC. That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
That would be good.
I'd watch it too, you know. Yeah. But
that would be cool.
Yeah. Well, Sonny, Tammy, it was an honor to talk to you. Like I said, I'm a longtime fan. I grew up watching you. You know, I'm from Richmond, Virginia, by the way.
Thank you so much. You know, anybody ever tell you sound like Bubba Gump?
I don't know. They tell me I sound
like
my father.
You sound like Bubba Gump.
You know what? Now that I think about it, you do sound exactly like your father. Now that I realize that, oh my God.
Yeah.
Eric, my friend, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. All right.
Thanks, man.
Take care, Eric.
Now, Tammy, I hate to go totally off subject. We're kind of all over the place, but you were involved at one point or another in SSCW here in lovely New Jersey, weren't you, with Carmine Sabian or whatever his goofy name is?
You know, probably. I mean, honestly, if you ask me what indie promotions I've worked for, I don't even know their letters and their names. I really have no idea. The only thing I ever remember about indies is the promoter's first name and the town I worked or the state I worked. Like, to me, they all just, like, blend together, so I couldn't tell you. I'm sure I did back in the day, but because I pretty much worked for every independent created. But, yeah, so what were you going to ask about it?
No, I was just, it was...
Well, actually...
What a
question.
Epic fail.
Hold on, actually, I'll follow up on that, because I was actually involved in a show there. It was I think it was SSCW.
Yes. Okay, I know the show you're talking about.
And
yeah.
And I was so the back. I was the backstage interviewer, and it was you. It was Chris. I think Sabu was on it. Mm. Crowbar was on it.
Francine was there too.
Francine was there, and okay. the ropes actually broke. In the middle of
the first match. Yeah, the ring.
I remember that show.
Okay, good job,
Kevin. I do remember that.
Because I remember Chris was there. Chris cut a great promo with me actually backstage, and he was furious. He's like, about people still running the ropes after, I think he told them, don't touch the ropes because they will break. And lo and behold, they did. And
I was
actually there for that, and then like the finish, like no one knew what the heck was going on. Like there's supposed to be a massive run-in at the end with all the wrestlers trying to break up and everything. And I remember you running around saying, like, telling anyone that was back there, and it was just me. You were like, "Get to the ring, get to the ring." I'm like, "What do you want me to do? I'm terrified." But
I do remember the ropes breaking in the first match on the show. Oh my god, that was great.
Yeah, so that was just classic. That's our little anecdote for
I think the better moment though.
I just got a text from my boyfriend saying he's listening to the show. Hi honey.
What
if
up?
You're listening.
What up?
Hi, darling.
Hi sir.
His name is, believe it or not, his name is Chris. So you can say hi Chris.
What's up, Chris?
Thanks for tuning in.
Yes, we appreciate the love. No, the one thing I do remember about this show was when Chris was coming to the ring, and the wonderful DJ, because they didn't have a regular bell, they just had that, like, that ring bell.
Oh, so it was like a hotel bell that you would just go, like...
No, but the best part was when he came out, there was no music, so the eight of us, like idiots, sitting up in the crow's nest, sang Back in Black, and he looked up at us, and he started doing the little dance and everything. That was a great moment.
Yeah, his strut and shaking his butt on the ring apron, yeah.
Now, I wanted to bring up real quick, I heard you on another podcast recently, Mr. Cole Cabana's Art of Wrestling.
Yeah, that was fun.
You don't have a lot of love for Mr. Vince Russo.
It's a love-hate relationship.
Well, aside from Vince, is there anybody over the years that really, I don't know, stuck in your craw, as they say?
Well, actually Vince and I are okay. We get along. Hold on, Jesus.
Yes.
he is listening because he just texted hello with a smiley face. Okay. See, Vince and I, if we're not working together in the wrestling business, we get along great. We actually went to a KISS concert together. He brought his kids. Chris was with me. Cornette was with us. We had a good time.
But when it involves
he and I working in this business, it's just like two Rams button heads. It's just, we just don't see eye to eye on anything. When I was in WWF, he was basically, all he was the magazine editor at the time. So he was basically in charge of, you know, putting together the magazine, choosing photos and everything like that. But part of my deal with Vince was, Vince McMahon, was I was allowed to choose what photos get printed in the magazine because I wanted control of how my character was viewed. So when we went to pick the photos for the Raw magazine that had two different covers, either Sable or me, you know, I went to go over the photos with Russo, and he showed me the photo he wanted to use on the cover, and I said, absolutely not. It was basically me on my hands and knees coming out of the ocean with my mouth wide open. It basically, you could have had a caption say, stick penis here with an arrow to my mouth. You know, so it was just, I thought it was inappropriate, and I thought it just wasn't the right kind of image I wanted to get across that my character wanted to get across. Basically, I tried to look at myself. I tried to be the all-American girl next door that little girls could look up to. You know, the girl next door, the cheerleader type, but, you know, that has that devious little side to her, too. Whereas, you know, the kind of girl you could bring home to mom. Whereas Sable's image was a lot more sluttier, you know, and that's the one that should have that more, you know, erotic, slutty kind of a look to her photos. So I was really upset, and I said, Vince, I really don't want this picture used. There's got to be other pictures we can put it on because I don't like, it's sending the wrong message. And he was like, no, I'm the editor of the magazine, and I'm going to pick the picture. I said, oh, yeah, motherfucker, watch this. So I walked down the hallway, just, you know, down the hallway, rounded a corner, down to Vince McMahon's office. I walked right in. I didn't even knock. Excuse me. I said to Beth, his secretary, I said, Beth, I need to talk to Vince right now. I'm having an issue down in creative. She let me right in. Vince was there. I said, Vince, listen. And I explained the whole thing about the picture, what it looks like, and I said, I really don't want this picture of me on the cover. He's like, come with me. So he walks me back down to the magazine area, and he stands face-to-face with Vince Russo. And I'm back basically behind Vince McMahon, kind of almost like sticking my fingers in my ears and waving my fingers and my you know, tongue out of my mouth going, nanny, nanny, nanny.
That's awesome.
Because Vince basically said to him, Mr. Russo, Sonny is to pick what photos she wants in the magazine, and that's the end of it, no questions asked. So McMahon walks back to his office, and Russo just stood there with his look on his face like, are you kidding me? And I was just like this smug little bitch with my arms crossed, like my chin in the air going, you know? So it was funny. So we did that, and, you know, he was still complaining about it left and right, left and right. And when he had walked away, I was still so mad, and I said out loud in front of Kevin Kelly, I said, oh, Vince Russo is just a cock-sucking stooge. Well, of course, Kevin Kelly decided to tell Vince Russo this, and that started a big war. But that was basically the end of my interaction with Russo at the time. But then when he was in WCW, we kind of tried to get along, bury the hatchet, and get along a little bit better there because, you know, I kind of had to work with him a lot more with everything they had us doing, which was shit anyway. But like I said, if we're just, you know, if we were just having a meal together or just talking somewhere, if we bump into each other at a concert, we get along fine. But if it has to do with this business, no, not at all.
Sonny, you actually just led me into what the next question was going to be that I was going to ask. If you had stayed longer, I know you were there for the good part of like the first half of the Attitude Era. If you had stayed there longer, would there have been anything, I guess, that you would or would not have done? Would you have kept to your stance that I want to be this person, or would you have realized when? Because that was a huge boom in that company's time, and there's probably going to be a lot more money that you could have been made, whether it be Playboy or just more risque segments
on
television.
I was offered Playboy. I was 23 years old.
Right.
The only person in the company with me at the time was Terry Ruddle. Sable wasn't even on the roster yet. So when they offered it to me, it basically took me 5 minutes to turn it down. I said, they called me on one of my 3 days off, and they said, we need to talk to you in the office tomorrow. I said, listen, I only have 3 days off, and I got to go back out on the road for a month, because back then we would be on the road for a month or two before we had 3 days off. And I said, can't we just talk about it on the phone? I have no time home. They said, no, we really need to see you in person. So I hung up, and the first thing I thought of was like, shit, I'm getting fired. No, they need to see me in person. So I go into the office, Chris and I do, and they sat us down in Vince's office with, you know, everybody who was on top in the office. And basically Vince just said, listen, we've had a call from Playboy, and they want you in the magazine. I was like, what? How did this happen? Turns out wrestling fans were writing to Playboy saying they wanted to see Sonny from the WWF, and Playboy had no idea who I was. So they just called the company. They got the rundown, saw some of the pictures, and said, yes, we'd love to have her. It took me 5 minutes to say no for a few reasons. Number one, I was only 23, so I was still very emotionally immature for that kind of thing. I wasn't comfortable with nudity. I wasn't even comfortable in lingerie. Like, if you look at all my photo shoots, when I'm in a bikini, I'm natural, and I'm smiling, and you can see I'm having fun. When you look at my lingerie shoots, my face is, like, stone-faced, and I look miserable because I felt so uncomfortable in lingerie. Even though some of the lingerie probably covered more than my, you know, long bikinis, I never wore lingerie, so it was a very uncomfortable kind of a setting for me. So, like, my facial expressions in a bikini shoot compared to a lingerie shoot were completely different. So that, you know, even thinking about doing even more sheer lingerie or nudity, I was like, there's no way I can do this. I'm just not emotionally ready for it. And I also thought to myself, you know, my father would roll over in his grave if his little girl took her clothes off. So it really took me like 5 minutes to say no. And Vince didn't argue with me. He's like, all right, I respect, you know, your choice. He goes, you know, I think you're turning something down that could be huge, but I respect your choice. I said, I'm sorry. I just really can't do it right now. I said, maybe down the road. I said, but I'm just not ready. So the next Monday Night Raw, I actually went in. I said, Terry, I said, what would you do if they said this to you? She's like, shit, I would do it. And she's like, I have no problem taking my clothes off. She goes, but I know how you are. That's just not your thing. And I know how you're still a little bit shy and stuff like that. She goes, so I don't blame you for not wanting to do it. And then it was like 6 months later, or maybe 6 months to 8 months later, is when Rena got hired. And after a few months after that is when they offered it to her. So, you know, and right away she was just like, all right, where do I sign? But I wasn't ready to do it at that time. And see, that's another reason why I think when I started there, I wish it was a few years later, so I was a little bit more mature and emotionally, you know, mature, because if it happened when I was maybe 25, 26, I might have said yes, you know. I mean, who knows? But at, you know, just 20, early 23 years old, I just wasn't, you know, it wasn't right. It wasn't the right thing to do.
I've noticed the past couple of stories you've told us, you've had no problem telling Vince McMahon no.
Yeah.
You don't hear too many stories about that from the
biggest,
boys these days.
I have the biggest set of balls in the wrestling business.
And I think you're turning Matt on more by that.
yeah, people used to look at me in shock the way I would, you know, talk to them. Because, like, we would be at TV, and I'd get pulled into a production meeting, and be like Vince, JR, Jim Cornette, you know, whoever else was needed to be there. And they would sit me down and, you know, they would, you know, Vince would tell me his idea. And it wasn't always his idea. It was, you know, like the booking committee's idea, but Vince would convey it. He'd be like, Tamara, because they always call me Tamara. He never called me Sonny. Like, he calls everybody on the roster by their work names except for me. He's always called me Tamara because he loves my first name. So he was like, Tamara, we have this idea and we'd like you to do so. And he would tell me, and I would sit there and look at him and like, well, that's fucking stupid. Why do you want me to do that? And the look on everybody's face was just like, whoa, did she just talk to Vince like that? Because like, I'm not intimidated by anybody. Vince never intimidated me. I had the most respect for him in the world. But on this plane, we were talking business and what was, you know, best for business. And I would just, basically, I'm like the female Jim Cornette. I have no filter between my mind and my mouth. So I would basically look at him and say, well, that's a fucking stupid idea. Who came up with that? You know, like everybody's trying to like hide their face. And then I would explain to him why I thought it was a fucking stupid idea. Then I would give him my idea of an alternative for that. And he would always go, okay, we're going to go with that. So I would always, you know, kind of get my way with that. But yeah, I never had a problem telling him I didn't want to do something. Like, for example, when they put with me with Farouk, the original idea, they wanted us to be like a romantic couple. And they wanted us to like tongue kiss on camera. And I said, absolutely not.
Why, you rubbed his eggshell thing on top of his head?
Yeah, I rubbed a little too much. But yeah, they wanted us to, you know, tongue kiss and be all like, we're a romantic couple. And I was like, I'm sorry, I just can't do it. I'm sorry. I'm not comfortable with that. So, you know, that's another reason why that angle didn't work, because the whole reason of putting him with me was to have that romantic angle going on. And, you know, when I said no, that's when the whole program kind of fizzled. But, I have no problem telling any promoter no, because I'm not going to do something I'm not comfortable with. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that feel, you know, pressured. Oh, God, if they tell me to do this, I have to do this. Well, if you hold your ground, I mean, yeah, you might be thought of as a bitch, but you'll also get respected for it. So,
yeah, there's not too many stories these days of people holding their grounds, you know, against Vince or any of them.
Not at all.
So you get along with Vince Russo when you guys are having dinner, but is there anybody else that you guys are like fire and ice? Anybody that you don't get along with at all?
Well, I've always said I have two people on my people I'd like to kill list, and I even write about it in my book. There's two chapters about these two people, Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff.
Ooh, two big ones. Yeah. I really can't wait to read this book.
Definitely
and
gonna
I
have
really
to go.
I really don't want to tell you why, because, like I said, they each have their own chapter in my book, and I don't want to give away too much of the book. But let's just say Paul Heyman cost me $170,000, and Eric Bischoff. How do I explain this in short words?
Has no penis.
No, he tried to, he and his little side piece, Kimberly Page, they basically tried to frame me with drugs and drug paraphernalia and put it all on my head. And when my urine tested negative, they couldn't even apologize, and I just eventually got let go anyway. So major, major, major dislike for that man. But you'll read all about it in my book.
Definitely have to pick up the book just for that alone, if anything.
Was that when they were inviting you to the strip club to hang out with him and his wife?
No.
I heard those stories are legendary.
Well, everybody knows. Well, I don't know if everybody knows, but it was very well known that Dallas Page and Eric Bischoff wife swapped. So Eric would get Kimberly and Paige would get Eric's wife all the time. Well, Kimberly, when I first got to WCW, she didn't want me there because she figures, uh-oh, I'm the top heel girl. Here comes Sonny, who's coming in as a heel. I don't want her here because, you know, she knew what I could do in WWF. So she started a whole bunch of shit about a certain product that she said she found in a locker room, and they pinned it on me, and so I got suspended without pay. And when I finally urinated in a cup right away, and they just so happened Eric Bischoff lost my results for 4 weeks. But then when he finally had my results, he said, oh, yeah, we were wrong. You're negative, but never apologized, never gave me back pay for keeping me off TV for so long. And, you know, eventually I got let go anyway. They said, oh, we really don't know what to do with you. It was just all bullshit. So, but you'll read all about it in the book, trust me.
Yeah, that whole period of WCW just seemed to have a lot of bullshit going on.
It was horrible. It's the worst locker room I've ever been in, worst place I've ever worked. Well, besides Puerto Rico, that was pretty bad.
Anything you want to share about Puerto Rico? We've only ever heard stories, you know, over the years here and there.
It's in the book, but...
Okay.
Well, basically, because we were supposed to go down, Chris and I were supposed to go down to IWA for Victor Quiñones.
Okay.
And about 2 weeks before we were supposed to go down, Sabu called, and Sabu is like family to us, so Chris and him are like brothers. He called and said, listen, you know, my uncle found out that you're supposed to go down to IWA with Victor Quiñones. He's like, will you do my uncle a favor and go for Carlos instead? And we said, all right, you know, we respected the Sheik. You know, Sabu was like family. So Chris said, all right, you know, we'll go down for Carlos instead. We'll do, you know, the Sheik a favor because Carlos and Sheik were very close. So we made our deal with Carlos. Our deal was for $800 a week, which was actually pretty good for Puerto Rican pay. And we planned on going down for 2 years. So I'm thinking, this is great. I'm going to live on a beautiful tropical island for 2 years. What could be, you know, what could go wrong? So I get there, and they put us up in a hotel for the first 4 weeks, right on the beach, great restaurant. The hotel was kind of run down, but the restaurant was great, and the location was great. And we were getting paid the first 4 weeks, no problem. And as soon as we signed a lease, we signed a one-year lease on an apartment right on the beach. The rent was $1,000 a month, all utilities included. Gorgeous, right on the beach. My fourth-story bedroom window overlooked the ocean. It was amazing. As soon as we signed a lease and we were on the island as, like, residents, pay started to dribble off. We wouldn't get the $800. We'd get $600. Then we would get $500. Then maybe $400. Eventually got down to, we were lucky if we got $50 a week. And every night at the shows, they would try to pay off the boys with empanadillas and beer instead of pay. So, and then we all go into the office on Mondays trying to, you know, wait for pay, and they would come and say, sorry, we have no money. Most of us would leave without money. The Americans, because we were, you know, kind of stuck there, they'd give us like a couple bucks so we could eat that week. And I refused. And we were taking money out of our savings account, but I refused to, you know, totally... you know, milk my savings account of everything it has just to live in Puerto Rico and work for this company for free. So after 6 months, I said to Chris, I said, listen, we can't do this anymore. I said, I'm going to go home. If you want to come with me, come. If you want to stay, stay, but don't expect me to send you money if they're not paying you. So he's like, no, you're right. We have to go home. So we told them, we gave them a 2 weeks notice, and they said, okay, we'll get your plane tickets for 2 weeks. So they could wrap up our angles and stuff like that. So for the next 2 weeks, we don't get any money, zero, nothing. So we're living off our savings account. Finally, it was one of our last shows, and well, this is in the book. I don't want to say too much, damn it.
No,
well,
we don't.
Leave it as a teaser. Let's just say
that when we did this TV taping 4 hours away from the office, at the end of the night, they realized that the keys to the production truck and the rent truck were missing. So how were they possibly going to get these trucks back to San Juan? And the rest is in the book. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Very nice.
Let's just say you fuck with me with money, and I'll get you back when you least expect it.
Your favorite moment ever across your career? I know it's a heavy question, but...
Oh, my God.
You got to have one that always sticks out with you.
You know what? I really can't narrow it down to one.
Okay, how about
three? So many amazing things. First of all, like when Body Donna's won the belts, that was amazing. When they told me I was the number one most downloaded celebrity on America Online, that was just mind-blowing. When I got slopped, it was one of the most fun things I've ever done in my entire life. I just had a blast with the slopping. I got so much publicity out of it. You know, you saw it every 15 minutes on Raw. I mean, I got a magazine cover. It was awesome. I had so much fun. And it was my little revenge because I used to throw handfuls of slop at the fans at ringside. But, you know, I got my heat back from them. Walking out with LOD for the first time to that music was just, it gave me chills. You know, there's been a few things that I could say were just, you know, really up there like, wow, I can't believe I'm actually doing this. This is so cool. You know, there's been quite a few. It's really, really hard to narrow it down to one thing.
And then, of course,
the Hall of Fame. That was just surreal. You know, I still can't believe it happened. But I have the ring, so I know it happened.
Yeah, I saw you. I think it was one of the pictures on your Facebook page. You're actually wearing the ring.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be just a huge moment. Huge moment for us, too.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Believe it or not, giving my acceptance speech was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. Because it's like, you know, give me a microphone and tell me I'm Sunny and tell me I have 15 minutes to cut a promo about whatever and I can go do it, no problem. But to tell me, okay, you have like 15 minutes to like, you know, kind of be sincere and genuine and be Tammy, and I was scared shitless. I really was. I didn't know how to talk. I didn't know how to say it. I didn't know how to start. It took me like 2 months to write that thing because I was just like, I have no idea how to be me. You know, since I was 17 years old, I've been cutting promos. I've always been, you know, another person my entire career. And to go out there and just try to be me was really, really, really hard. especially when as soon as I walked on stage, I forgot every word of my speech, so I was, like, freaking out. So I calmed myself down. I got to the podium, and I said, okay, just tell your story. Just tell your story. So basically, I kind of cleared my mind, and I just started talking and telling my story as if I was sitting down having a conversation with anyone. But it was really the hardest thing I've ever done, but it was the most incredible night of my life. It really was. The whole weekend was the most incredible weekend of my life.
Yeah, and I remember the rumblings that you were coming back, and then when you came back, you looked great. You looked like you could, you know, have another 20 years in the business, honestly.
Thanks. Well, hey, you know, I'm only 40. I'm not dead yet.
No.
You know, crazier things have happened.
See,
but, you know, that's one good thing, too. For some reason, I really don't age. Like, even now, if I'm out somewhere and I meet someone that I don't know, they basically, you know, guess my age, like, between 28 and 32. So luckily, my skin is holding up very well. I'm not wrinkling yet. And my energy level is like a 20-year-old. I mean, it's crazy. I'm like, I don't drink anymore. I'm 11 months sober.
Awesome.
I haven't taken pills in years. And I eat very, very healthy. Like, I don't drink coffee. I don't drink hot tea. I don't drink soda. No carbonation. Every bit of food I put in my body is, mostly healthy. I try to avoid processed foods as much as possible. So, internally, I'm, like, healthier than a 20-year-old. So I've got more energy than, you know, teenagers. So that's keeping me young as well. And plus, I think because I've been in the business for so long, I've never really emotionally matured. Like, everybody my age is a soccer mom driving a minivan, you know, so they've had that chance to mature. I'm still, you know, living like I'm, you know, 23 years old. So, you know, it's good in a way, bad in a way, but good in a way. So it's keeping me young.
Oh, it's great to hear how well you're doing. You know, we're friends on the show with a few of the boys that have had their problems over the years, like Justin Credible.
Yeah.
You know, we've had him on a bunch of times. And, yeah, you know, it's tough when you see people on TV all the time and you feel like they're part of your family, even though they may not know you ever. But, you know, you feel like you know them and you have this, like, relationship with them and who they are. And, you know, it's tough to see people when they're down, you know. Like, and we saw, you know, Justin had his big relapse when Shane Douglas was doing his first Extreme Rising show. And, you know, we've been in touch with him since then. He's actually part of our network. We host his Pro Wrestling 101 in podcast form on the Shining Wizards Network. Cheap plug. No, it's good. It's good that, you know, you hear so many tragedies that came out of wrestling and that still come out of wrestling that so many people are getting clean. So, you know, more power to you guys, you know, guys like Justin, you know, guys that are, you know, getting off that stuff and realizing there's a lot more than, you know.
Right. Well, I do want to say about it, too, and for everybody listening out there, you have to realize, like, when you're in rehab, they teach you that relapse is part of recovery. It's going to happen to everybody. There's nobody that leaves rehab and stays 100% clean for the rest of their life. It is impossible to do. It's a disease. It's a demon in your body, and it will take you over once in a while. I mean, so I hate to see when, like, you know, guys have a relapse, and right away everybody's all negative on them again on websites, saying, oh, well, he had a relapse. He's a piece of shit again. He'll probably die tomorrow. I mean, please. I mean, give it a rest already. A relapse doesn't mean that they've gone back to their own ways and they're smoking crack or doing crystal meth or drinking 24 hours a day like I did. I was binge drinking 24 hours a day. That's how bad it got with me. I would, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning I was drinking. You know, if I ran out at 6 a.m., I couldn't wait for the liquor store to open at 10 a.m. It takes over your whole life. And, you know, I'm, you know, just because, you know, somebody breaks down and has a relapse and has one night of drinking or whatever, you know, drug of choice there is, that doesn't mean they're back down to the same, you know, bottom that they had hit before when they realized, because you really have to hit your bottom when you realize, okay, I think I need help. And you have to actually admit to yourself, okay, I have a problem. You have to accept that you have that problem. You have to acknowledge it, and then you have to treat it. But if you don't, you know, if you're still in that denial stage, there's no way to actually accept it and acknowledge it. But just because somebody has a relapse does not mean they're going back to their old ways and you might as well give up on them. It's a relapse. It happens. I mean, just like, let's say you're on a diet, okay, you want to do a low-carb diet, but you happen to go to Olive Garden, you just have to have that bowl of pasta. You have it once. It doesn't make you 300 pounds again. You know what I mean? You got to put it all, it's all relevant to whatever your drug or food of choice is, kind of thing. And I just hate to watch when, you know, everybody was talking about, oh, Scott Hall had a relapse. So what? Instead of, you know, bashing him, why don't you get behind him and give him some support? You know, write on his Twitter page, say, dude, listen, I heard you had a relapse, but, you know, stick with it. You can do this. Instead of writing to him, oh, we're going to put you back in the death pool. I mean, seriously. I mean, if it was somebody in your family, guys, think about it. If your brother had this problem and he had to have, he was doing great for 6 months and had a relapse, would you want all your friends and family to say, oh, you're a piece of shit. You might as well die tomorrow? Or do you want to get behind him and say, you know what? it's not that bad. You can still do this, and give them a little support. I mean, because you can't do it on your own. You need support.
No.
So, I mean, for everybody listening, I hope I could just educate you a little bit that the way you go about bashing people when they relapse is so negative and so wrong. Why don't you just give them a nice message? Say, dude, listen, I heard about what happened, but it's not the end. You can do this. You know, yeah. Give a little positive reinforcement.
It's funny you mentioned that. Like, you know, us on the show, we've had a few people over the years go through the same thing. You even look at Jake the Snake. You know, he's been living with DDP at his house, you know, trying
right,
to get clean.
Exactly.
And I think it was about a month or two ago, he went out and he had two drinks and he came home.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he was expecting Dallas to read him the Riot Act, I guess. And he was just like, you know, hey, I messed up. And Dallas was like, okay, you had two drinks. Let's keep going.
Right. That's all it is. Two drinks does not mean you're going to turn into a flaming alcoholic again. It doesn't. You know, it really doesn't. And it's sad. I mean, because I'll be honest with you, like when back in the day when Jake was with us on the road and, you know, he was doing all his partying, I couldn't stand the man. I actually hated him. He was, when he had all his problems, he was very two-faced. He actually would come to me and Chris as if he was a mentor and then go behind our backs and tell all the boys and the agents everything like we would complain about. He was very two-faced and I actually hated the man. Since he's become sober, he and I get along like we get along fantastically. Whenever we see each other at a convention or signing, we actually go in a corner and have an impromptu AA meeting together. He always brings a big book. We sit there, we read a little bit from it, and we discuss things. I mean, I get along with him great now because, I mean, like I said, when you have a problem, it's not you in your soul and in your body. There's some demon in there. When you're clean, the real person comes out. He's actually a good guy. He really is. So, I mean, when he had his little relapse, like just like you said, it's two drinks. All right, let's go to sleep. Wake up tomorrow. It's a new day, one day at a time. You know, it's really, really sad when people want to just, you know, bash somebody, you know, because they had a little relapse. It's not the end of the world. And they teach you in rehab, relapse is part of recovery, and it's going to happen. Accept that it's going to happen. I mean, if you go to rehab and say, I'm never going to drink again or I'm never going to take a pill again, you're lying to yourself because it's going to happen. I mean, and I'll be perfectly honest with you. About 2 months ago, I had a relapse. I had one night, I went out, and I had like three or four drinks. Because I said to myself, you know what, do you think I can, maybe I can drink socially. Maybe I can. Maybe I don't have to be a binge drinker I used to be. So I went out, I had like three or four drinks, and I felt fine. I didn't get drunk, you know, I felt a little happy and relaxed. But at the end of the night, I was just so upset with myself. I was like, all right, that's the wrong thing to do. I shouldn't have said I should even try to be a social drinker because I know me and I know my addictive personality. It's going to eventually, and not right away, but it would eventually turn into my binge drinking problem again where I was drinking 24 hours a day, 5 days a week and trying to sober up on weekends so I can make bookings. So I said to myself that night, I said, all right, you know what? I relapsed, big deal. It wasn't because of stress. I actually just said, hey, I'm going to try to be a social drinker. And, you know, I didn't get into trouble when I was drinking. I didn't get a DUI. I didn't beat up any men, you know. But at the end of the day, I was upset with myself. I said, all right, you know, I'm going to take the next step. I actually got on a pill. It's called Antabuse. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yeah.
It's a pill you take daily that if you have even a sip of alcohol on top of this pill, you get violently ill. You start throwing up like The Exorcist, like Linda Blair, for 24 hours to the point where you're like, you have to go to the hospital. So I got on that pill and I've been on it since. So now I'm at the point where, and it builds up in your system. You can't like not take it one day and drink that day because you need like 2 weeks off the pill in order to drink again because it builds up in your system. It stays in your system. So just to make sure I wouldn't do it again, I said, you know what? I'm going to go back on the pill because I was on it when I first came out of rehab. And basically that's my little insurance policy. So let's say I'm out somewhere and a couple of my friends are having a drink. Even if I want to drink, I'm not going to because I don't want to get sick as a dog, you know? So, you know, and because some people don't have to go to that extreme measure to take that pill. But I said, you know what? I went out and drank and now I regret it because I feel bad about myself. I'm going to get on the pill. So I wouldn't even be able to relapse right now if I wanted to, you know? And I actually think everybody who had a drinking problem should be on this pill because it really, really deters you from even wanting to drink. But you know, like back to my point, don't get all negative on somebody who has a relapse. Just support them a little bit. Give one supporting comment and, you know, they'll bounce back. It's not the end of the world. It's one little relapse.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, though, like, you know, especially now with social media, Twitter, Facebook, you know, for all the positivity, and there's tons of positivity out there. There's always one or two, of course, bad apples.
Mm-hmm.
You ever have to deal with that in person? I'm sure you've had many a times over the years. Where, like, you know, you're at a convention, like, you know, say Legends of the Ring, and, you know, for every person that comes over and, you know, thank you and we appreciate what you've done and we've always loved your work or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure you've had over the years, oh, you're a bitch.
Honest to God, I have never had anybody say anything to my face because I think they're scared to death I'll punch them. I'm not kidding. Nobody has ever said anything to my face. Where it happens is on, like, Twitter or Facebook, because they're keyboard warriors. They think they can say anything on there. And when they say something negative to me like that, I'm like, all right, next time you come to one of my shows or conventions, I beg you, come up to me and say it to my face, and then I'll shake your hand, because I don't think you have the balls to do it. And no, not one person has ever come up to my face and said anything like that. There was one time I did a Ring of Honor show in Manhattan. It was a bunch of years ago. It was right around Christmas time. And I had a huge line at intermission. Probably every person in that building on Hammerstein Ballroom or wherever we were, Manhattan Center, they were online for, you know, the autograph picture thing at intermission. And some guy walked by, and he didn't stop at my table, but he walked by. And as he passed, he was about 6 feet away from my table with his back toward me. He screams out, "Sonny's a whore." Well, I walked away from the back of that table with two of my friends who were cops, because I was with my ex at the time, who was a cop. And we walked over to the guy. They stood in front of him so he couldn't walk away. I got hit in his face, nose to nose. I said, "Say it again, motherfucker." Do you think he said it? No.
I love this.
That was the only time. Because I think when I get mad about something, I get like this sparkle in my eye that kind of puts fear into people, and he couldn't say it again. And nobody else has ever said anything to my face, and I think they know better.
I just love.
I mean, just remember, guys, I went to jail for 4 months because I beat the shit out of a grown man bigger than me.
So what I mean, I just love when a beautiful woman says motherfucker. There's just something like so like empowering and erotic about that.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you if I could curse on this ahead of time, because I have a potty mouth.
You could say motherfucker for the next 10 minutes. We'll be very happy with that.
Motherfucker, 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 motherfucker.
Well, Matt's got his material for tonight.
Easy. You're going to get me in trouble.
No, you'd never get in trouble.
Hey, hey, if I can tell Vince McMahon that's a fucking stupid idea, I can say motherfucker all night long.
Yeah. Go for it.
He's speechless.
I'm just one of the boys. You know, that's all it is.
Where do you think that is, I don't even know how to phrase it. Where do you think you got your balls from? Like, you just seem like you just don't give a shit, like...
I don't.
Like, is that...
I don't know. I think it's part of... It's who I am. I mean, I'm Russian, and Russian people are very strong, very stubborn, very outspoken people. I'm also a Sagittarius, and if you read anything about Sagittarians, we're very outspoken. We speak what's on our mind. We don't take shit. We're very straightforward. It's a lot of that. And also, I mean, I was 17 years old when I got in this business, 21 when I went on the road full-time with the WWF. You have to have a thick skin. You have to grow a set of balls in order to make it. I mean, I've seen people break down and cry in locker rooms. Now, I've seen some of the girls literally cry like babies after a match, or, you know, or even after an interview or something. And I'm like, you're not going to survive. This is like, it's like a zoo, and you're not going to survive if you're that, you know, you're that thin-skinned. And I basically taught myself very early on, you know, get a thick skin and grow some balls and learn not to take shit. Because if you take shit, you get walked all over. And I hate to say this, because I love them to death and I still love them to death. I mean, my best friend in the whole wide world, Chris Candido, he was soft a lot of times. He let people walk all over him, and that held him back a lot. He was too nice a guy. That was a problem. I mean, nice people always finish last, and he was too nice of a guy. He would never complain about things. He would just say, you know, oh, okay, you know, whatever you want, no big deal. Like, promoters would stiff him on money on indies, and he would just accept it. And, you know, I was like, babe, you can't be like that, because people know they can walk all over you because you're too nice. Like, he was great in the ring, but his business mind was just really, really bad because he was just too nice a guy. And I basically kind of equaled us out. If we were on a scale, we'd be totally equal, because I was such a bitch back then that, you know, I just equaled even it out. And there'd be times I would go to his indies with him if I wasn't even booked. Let's say he would get his pay and it was like $200 short. I went into the promoter's locker room and got in his face and said, are you fucking kidding me? With the performance he put on, you're going to cut him short? And I'd get the money out of him. You know, I was like the hired muscle of the couple, you know, because I didn't care. You know, I'm not in this business to be nice. I'm in this business for business and to make a living, and that's pretty much it. You know, he just wanted to be friends with everybody. If everybody involved in this business hates me, I really don't care. I'm not here to make friends. You know, it's all business to me.
Now, You mentioned your thick skin.
That was very awkward.
That I'm assuming that came into play when you got to Smoky Mountain, and then obviously when you went to ECW, because as a fan who used to go to ECW, we were a bunch of rude, disgusting animals. Were?
Oh, absolutely you were. Absolutely. Well, I mean, you got to think, too. I mean, who did I learn under? Who was my mentor? Jim Cornette. I mean, he's got one of the thickest skins, you know, there is, because, you know, of all the shit that he's taken over the years. So he's basically, I mean, maybe it's good and bad that I trained under him, because it's good in a way, because it did develop my thick skin. It did give me balls, and I am very, you know, I'm very outspoken with, you know, all my ideas. It's bad in a way because I basically became diarrhea of the mouth just like him. You know, you like mimic who you learn from and what you're around and what you see. And that's just basically, you know, what I grew up seeing when I was 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 was Jim Cornette being Jim Cornette. So very early on, I learned, okay, this is the way you are. And then when I realized down the road, I'm like, okay, maybe I shouldn't be as much like him. But, you know, I just couldn't change my ways by then. It was just like inherited almost. But, I don't know. That's just what I think. I mean, you have to stand your ground. You have to have balls of steel, and especially if you're a girl, you have to have balls of steel to last in this business. I mean, look at it this way. I'm on 23 years in this business, and I'm still booked solid every single weekend. What's the longevity? What's the shelf life of most women in this business? What, 5-6 years if they're lucky? You know, it's just, it's not, you know, you can't even compare it. And I think, you know, I can attribute my longevity, I think, to a couple of things. A, my thick skin and my outspokenness and my, you know, my business sense that way. But also, I mean, luckily, I was kind of the first, and I did kind of open doors. So, again, you know, gives me like a little bit of a better, and, you know, influence and better, you know, I don't know. But, yeah, you got to be a bitch, I guess. That's the only way to be. I can give bitch 101 lessons for anybody who wants to last in this business.
When you first came into Smoky Mountain, did you have? I know you were dating Chris at the time. Did you have any like background in wrestling? Like, did you watch tapes with him? Were you a fan before that, or was this all?
I was a huge fan when I was a kid. This is all in the book too. I talk about some stuff in the book that nobody's ever known about me when I was a kid. I started watching when I was about 8 years old. My neighbor Joseph would come to my house on Saturday mornings and watch wrestling at my house because his mom wouldn't let him watch at home. And we grew up together since birth, so I just started watching it because of that, and I got hooked. And every single hang on a second. Okay. Every single month, my mom and my sister would take me to the Meadowlands. So I'd go see the live shows every month. We had front row ringside on the aisle every single time. And I was a diehard wrestling fan. I mean, like I said, I write about all this in the book, but I have 8x10 photos of me with all the wrestlers that I went to see with their autographs on the pictures. I have an album of 8x10s that my sister would take pictures of me with the guys, and then when I'd go meet them again, they would sign the 8x10s for me. I still have it, and some of those pictures are actually going in the book. So you're going to see me as like a 10-year-old kid, you know, as a wrestling fan with Ricky Steamboat and Barry Windham and Terry Funk, and it's crazy. But, you know, I was the biggest fan. I tell about in the book how when I was a kid, I wanted to be a wrestler. I wanted to be a lady wrestler, and Wendy Richter was my idol. And I described basically how I would have, you know, matches with the Invisible Man on my mom's bed, which was my wrestling ring. So I talk about all this stuff in the book, and nobody ever knew I did this. I gave myself a, you know, theme music. I gave myself a name, and, you know, this is what I wanted to do. But then, you know, when puberty hit, when I was in high school, I became a cheerleader, and I really didn't watch wrestling anymore. And then senior year of high school is when I met Chris, and when he told me he was going to be a wrestler, I was like, oh, my God, not this stuff again. I used to watch it when I was a kid, and, you know, I was just going to school to be a doctor. I was going to Miami to be a plastic surgeon. And one thing led to another, and, you know, life took its course, and my plans changed, and I ended up doing what I do.
What was
it's all described, you know, step by step in the book.
What was your theme music when you were a kid?
Warrior by Patti Smyth.
Oh, yes! Awesome! That fucking rules! That rules so
it
hard.
It was great. That was my theme music, and I used to walk down the long hallway, going down to my mom's room, making my entrance to the music, and doing my whole entrance, getting in a ring, and then the bell would ring, and I had my match with the Invisible Man, Invisible Little Girl, I should say.
All right, so let me ask you, if Matt dresses as the Invisible Man on Saturday, can he have a match with you in the bed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I will chain wrestle with you any day of the week.
That's awesome.
Oh, boy. Yep. The
absolutely.
Pressure.
Wow,
the pressure
he's blushing. He's blushing so hard right now.
I wouldn't be able to chain wrestle with her. Come on.
You'd let her do the chain wrestling.
Look, I'm not. It's one thing that I go out in public and I'm already embarrassed. I'm not going to go out and let. I mean, it'd be an honor, but I'm not going to get beat up by Tammy / Sonny.
Are you kidding me? You should take a punch in the face. Come on.
Man,
come on, one punch in the face.
So, so I'm not one of these girls that just happened to, like, it didn't just fall on my lap because I was dating a wrestler. It's not really how it went. I mean, I was a diehard fan, you know, and, when I did get into the business, I studied everything about the wrestling industry all the way back to 1905, George Hackenschmidt and Frank Gotch. I know my shit. I mean, nice. Think about it too. I was there with Chris Candido and Jim Cornette, who know everything that has ever happened in the wrestling business. And that's who I learned from. And with Cornette teaching me, you have to be old school. You have to know your history so you can respect your craft. I was like, all right, I'll learn every bit of it. I already knew a lot of it just by, you know, because I was dating Chris and all we used to do was sit and watch, videos over and over and over again. Our Friday nights, me and him, we wouldn't go to the movies. We'd sit and watch wrestling, watch old tapes. And he had a collection of videos that would blow your mind. I mean, we watched everything. He even had old Betamaxes and saved a Beta player because he had some classic stuff on Beta that, he couldn't get transferred over to VHS at the time. So that was our Friday and Saturday nights basically together. We would watch, tapes over and over and over again, Japan and Puerto Rico and every territory that has ever been created. So I learned all that. And then with Cornette, I learned a lot on the road with him too. We would take like long 6-hour, road trips to the shows with him, and he would just talk and talk and talk. My brain is like a sponge. I have a photographic memory. Anything I hear once or see once, I remember. And that's also why I was going to be a doctor, because I have a great, brain like that. And I would just soak up every little thing that he said, and I would always remember it all. So, like, my brain became like an encyclopedia of wrestling. I'm actually the only person ever, and Cornette can attest to this, I beat Jim Cornette in the wrestling name game once on the road, and nobody's ever beaten him before.
Wow, that's impressive.
And nobody's ever beaten me. I've beaten Tom Pritchard. I beat Chris. Nobody's ever beaten me. I've beaten everybody that comes along. And I beat Cornette once. Most of the time, he kicked our ass. But I did beat Cornette once.
I'm not familiar
with
that.
That was a six-hour game. Oh, you don't know the wrestling name game?
No, please explain, because I feel like this could be like a bit on the podcast.
It's something we do on road trips just to pass the time. It's basically, let's say I start with Ric Flair. I send it to you. You have to say the first name starts with an F, because I gave you Flair for F. So you'd have to say the first name starts with an F, so let's say Frank Gotch. Then the next person in the line gets a G, because that's the first letter of the last name, so they would say Gorgeous George. And you go around the car like that. So whatever name you get sent, you have to say a first name that starts with the letter of that last name. And you just keep going and keep going until basically you can't go anymore. You're allowed 3 strikes before you're out. And somebody in the car has to verify the name. At least one person has to verify that the person exists. So, like, let's just say I say Shell Von Schmidt. Okay, one other person in the car has to say, yes, there was a Shell Von Schmidt in this territory at this time. But if nobody else can verify it, you can't use it. It has to be a verified name. So a lot of times, too, if it was like me, Cornette, and Chris and Tom Pritchard on the road, if we were stuck and somebody couldn't verify, we'd call up Cornette on the phone and get his verification just so we can keep going on the game. So you can go and go and go, and of course it gets down, and you can't repeat names. You can use anybody, promoters, bookers, managers, valets, wrestlers. You can use nicknames. You can use, and if they wrestle, that's two different things. You can use the two different names throughout the game, but you can't repeat names. And then when you get stuck, and like the worst letters are like W's, Y's, V's, Z's, Q's, then you're obviously going to lose. But and we went for a 6-hour game, and I beat Jim Cornette. And he was shocked, and I got like the biggest like applause, and it was so funny. But yeah, so I know my shit. I know my history. I made sure I learned everything about this business.
Damn, that's wow. I think Matt's happy. I think that's
I think it's just a great game to play.
It's so much fun. And like, over the years too, every time we'd be in the car with some indie wrestler, we taught them the game, and it's fun. And believe me, you pass the time that way. And you actually get to learn some. You get to learn too, because you're learning all these names that you didn't know before, and then, if you don't know who they are, usually, whoever does know who they are, they'll give you a quick little bio of them, and, you go on. It's a really nice little learning game to pass the time. But yes, I know my wrestling history.
You and I are just about the same age, and I could only picture that if we went to high school together, we would hook up as wrestling fans, and then I would be so jealous because I'd be in love with you, but then Chris would come along and steal you away.
Well,
from
it would have to be grammar school, middle school, because I didn't watch when I was in high school. I was just cheerleader and like Miss Popularity. I kind of got out of it then. But I used to bring like my wrestling magazines to middle school all the time, and all I wore in middle school was Asics wrestling shoes. That's all I wore. And I actually wrestled on the boys wrestling team in 8th grade.
For real?
I was
serious?
Obsessed.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, I was on the wrestling team. I was the only girl in weightlifting club, and I was the only girl on the wrestling team.
See, this is the funny. This is the funny thing about how, like, you know, getting to know the people that you see on TV has changed. I mean, yes, you were the most downloaded woman on AOL, but there wasn't really that interaction like there is nowadays. You know. Like, right. Nowadays, everybody's such an open book. It's just so great to hear stories. Like, you know, we saw you on TV. We're familiar with your history in wrestling. But that's some great stuff. That is great stuff.
Mm-hmm. I know. I mean, it's you know, and I'm glad that way because I like when people learn about the real person, you know, behind a character. Because, I don't know, I always said that because I have a really good relationship with all the fans out there. And because the way I look at it is if there wasn't fans, none of us would have a fucking job. None of us would be paying mortgage or rent. Nobody would be paying electrical bills. Nobody paying the cable bills. And we wouldn't be eating if it wasn't for those fans buying those tickets. So why would you want to give the fans a cold shoulder and not give them the time of day? So that's why, like, I always get hired for conventions and autograph signings. And word gets around because I'm really, really good at them because I give the fans the time of day. The way I look at it, fans don't show up at a signing to buy an autographed picture of you. They don't show up to take a picture with you. They show up for the experience. They want to talk to you. They want to be a part of your life for 5 minutes, and they want you to talk back. And too many of the guys out there, current and I know on contract, or guys in the past, and the girls, that I've seen so many times that they don't even look up at the fan. They sign their name and hold the picture up, and that's it. And I think that's so wrong because they totally take these fans for granted because they don't realize that if these fans aren't there, they're not going to have a job where they are paying all these bills and making all this money. They're not going to have a job, period. So every single person that comes up to me for an autograph or a photo op, I spend like 5 or 10 minutes chit-chatting with. I always ask their name. I always shake their hand. If it's a kid, I always ask what their favorite wrestler is, and we start talking about that. If it's an adult, so where are you from? What do you do for a living? And I give them that 5, 10 minutes of one-on-one, like, intimacy, and they walk away with a smile on their face like, holy shit, she's really cool. And that's what always brings them back. I mean, you would not believe how many return customers I have at all these signings and shows. And when they walk up, I'm like, hey, it's you. I remember you from so-and-so. I mean, so many people come back to me over and over and over again because I give them that time of day. And if you're just looking down and you have sunglasses on, you sign your name and give it to them, I guarantee they're not coming back for a second photo op. Ever. And this is another reason, too, why I get return bookings with all the same promoters and all the same conventions is because the way I do handle them, all they do is get the fans saying, wow, she was awesome. She was really cool. She's so nice. She's so normal. And this is what these promoters want. You know, so like a lot of people always tell me, how are you so how are you so busy on the independent scene? How are you so busy? How are you booked solid every weekend through January? It's because a lot of my stuff is return, you know, bookings with people because I do give the fans what they want. And I do give them that time of day. And I disagree with everybody who doesn't give those fans the time of day. I think that's ignorant and just obnoxious. I really do.
Now, you mentioned, you know, if it wasn't for the fans, you wouldn't have the work and you wouldn't have the lifestyle.
Absolutely.
What's your take?
What do you want? I mean, what are you going to do, wrestle in front of an empty arena and go home with that paycheck? Absolutely not, you know.
What's your take on a lot of these wrestlers and these indie guys throwing around the word mark?
I think it's disrespectful. I think when marks call each other marks, that's a different story because they're kind of just putting themselves in a little club kind of thing. But I think it's very disrespectful for like the wrestlers and the boys and the girls to call them marks because basically it's you're calling them like a simpleton, like an ignorant simpleton basically. And I just think that's not cool. They used to call them marks back in the day because that's how when everything was still kayfabe and kayfabe was alive. They would call them marks so fans, you can't say, shush, we can't talk about the finish because there's a fan here. You would just basically say mark, and everybody would know, okay, there's a fan around, and, shut your mouth. But especially, I saw this a lot in USWA when we were down there when we first started. Everything was kayfabe down there. The baby faces and heels weren't in the same locker rooms. You were always, you never even met each other until you got in the ring. But if you were around each other, you had to talk in carny. You had to be kayfabe. And if there was somebody coming through, you just sit mark. You just say, all right, shut your mouth. Let's not go over a finish right now. But for them to use that term nowadays, I do think that's very respectful because it is a well-known term and everybody knows what it means. And I think, I really think that, I mean, when you call, when you're goofing around with somebody and, you're such a mark, that's a different story.
Right, of course.
But when they start, being derogatory about it, I just think that's really wrong and disrespectful. I really do. Because that goes right back to what I'm saying. If it wasn't for the fans, we wouldn't have a job.
I've gone on a rant on the show before about the term mark.
Right.
I mean, I get it. I do. I'm not in the wrestling business, but I know, like, I'm a mark. If I went to fucking Stop and Shop and Tammy's there shopping, I'm going to fucking pop.
Well, you know?
But at the same time, it's like, at the same time, it's like, just like you said, without us, there is no, there's no, you know, dudes wrestling each other in their underwear, baby oil on all of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one time or another, every wrestler out there was a mark. So how, why is it right to call people marks when you yourself were one? And you wouldn't have been, you wouldn't appreciate it when, you know, if you were called one back when you were a mark. So why do it about, you know, why say it about other people? It's just, you know, that's when egos come into play, and that's when, you know, the boys think they're better than, you know, the fans. And you got to realize you're all on an equal playing field. You're not better than the fans, because it's like basically
banana.
Fans can't survive without the wrestlers. Wrestlers can't survive without the fans. It's like one little happy family. But the boys don't want to, you know, see that. They really don't. They think they're better than them, but they're really not, because it takes two to tango, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. Matt really lost his shit one day, and we were just, you know, preach on.
Right.
So when you're at the supermarket, you get recognized. What's that like?
Yep.
Does a bit of you get annoyed that, like, oh, I just want to get my groceries and go the fuck home, or?
No, not at all.
That's
awesome. 2 weeks ago, I was in Walmart, and I was shopping, because our Walmart out here is a grocery store, too. And I'm walking around the aisles, and I see this family, this man, this woman, and two teenagers, like, kind of looking at me. I'm like, all right, I think I just got recognized. Well, plus, I had just come from a signing, so my makeup was all done, my hair was done, I was dressed up. Like, if I go out with no makeup and, like, a ponytail and just sweats, it's kind of hard to realize I'm me. But when I'm, you know, done up, of course they know. So I'm like, all right, they recognize me. And about 5 minutes later, the dad comes up. He's like, are you? And I knew what he was going to say. So I'm like, yeah, that's me. Nice to meet you. And he's like, and he looks at his kids. He's like, I told you it was her. And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'll leave you alone. I'm like, no, it's okay. You know, what's your name? And I called the kids over, and, you know, we're just talking. I said, yeah, it's me. I'm sorry about the fake eyelashes, but, you know, I just had a signing. I don't usually look like a clown like this, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, well, we're sorry about it. And I said, no, it's okay. I'm like, you want to take a picture or something? I even said to him, I'm like, you know, I'd be more than happy to take a picture with you if you want. So, you know, we chit chatted and we took a picture, and then we went on a merry way. But it's not annoying to me at all. It's really not. The only thing that I do say gets annoying is, like, if you're in the middle of a meal at a restaurant and, like, your fork is in your mouth, that's when it's annoying. If somebody comes up with a pen and paper in your face, you know, just do it. If you do it at the right time, it's fine. But, like, you know, when you're chewing something, it's kind of awkward for somebody to say, can I have an autograph? But, you know, I welcome it, you know, at any time, you know, and like I said, I make small talk with people, because then they walk away saying, wow, she was really cool. And maybe the next time I'm in the area and they see, you know, a poster with my name on it, maybe they'll come and buy a ticket. You know, so it's all, you know, it all works hand in hand. So, I mean, there are a lot of guys, and like when I'm in the airport, if somebody recognizes me, like when I'm going to WrestleMania or something, I stop and I sign every autograph and I take every picture. After my Hall of Fame induction, we went back to the hotel. I'm still on my gown, and I'm supposed to be getting to, where was I supposed to be getting to? I don't remember. But I stood in the lobby of the hotel in my red gown after the Hall of Fame induction for 3 hours, and I signed every autograph and took every picture with everybody who came up to me. And at least all these other guys, like, walking through, no, 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 just trying to get where they're going. And I stood there, and I did every single last one. I'm like, this is my weekend. This is my Hall of Fame. This is my night. I'm going to show appreciation to the people who put me here. And I did. I mean, so many times, after that weekend, you would not believe the amount of pictures I got tagged in from so many fans that took a picture with me in the lobby that night. And they were like, they would write to me saying, you were the coolest person. So many people would walk right by. You were awesome. And, you know, I gave that to them because they gave me my career. They gave me my spot on the Hall of Fame. So why not show them a little appreciation and hang out?
Now, would you take the time to sign an autograph or take a picture during an Eddie Money show?
That's another story. Seriously, you can't pull me away from the money man. I'll dance with you, though.
Oh, she hear that?
I'll dance and sing a duet with you at an Eddie Money concert.
Take me home tonight?
Take me home tonight. Or walk.
I don't want to let you go till we see the light.
Take me home tonight. I can't sing, I'm sorry.
Neither can I.
Be my little baby.
I'm actually going to Vegas on Sunday with my new boyfriend. We're flying in his private plane down to Vegas to see Motley Crue and Elton John.
So together on the same show?
No. Motley Crue is on Sunday and Elton John is on Tuesday.
Look, It's a feasible question. They both dress like women.
Wait, they?
The Motley Crue and Elton John.
Oh, I thought you just meant Vince. It's hard to believe Mick Mars is still alive. What is he, like 1,000?
Oh, poor Mick Mars.
Yeah, Mick Mars was like 50 when Motley Crue started.
He doesn't even move on stage. He just like stands still and they prop him up with like a stick behind his back.
Yeah, that's what I heard. My brother's still a diehard Motley Crue fan. He goes to see them all the time. Your favorite Crue album?
Oh my God.
Don't say the one where
I listen to over and over again, and this is basically my regular Crue CDs because everything on there is so great. I just like Red, White, and Crue. I just love that. There's everything I like on there.
Nice.
Okay. You're going from Shout at the Devil all the way to Same Old Situation.
Yeah, I played it. I play it in the gym. Like, I don't even have an iPod. I go old school with CD players in the gym.
Really? Come on. You got to update.
I swear to God, I do not own an iPod. I wouldn't even know how to use one.
Your mind would be blown if you got an iPod. I swear to God, it's the greatest thing ever.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to ask the boyfriend to get me one and program it or download songs. I don't even know how to do that.
It's not hard.
I'm very technologically unadvanced.
You work the Facebook and do you work the Twitter too?
Yeah, I do. I hate Twitter though, but yeah. I do it.
Well, you work the Facebook, so I mean, if you could work Facebook, you could figure out iTunes.
I don't know how to download music. I don't know how to use that thing. And those iPods that like they don't even have like labels on the buttons. I don't know what to push.
What do you mean? It's like a fucking TV remote. There's play, there's stop.
This is great.
Fast forward, rewind.
It's very confusing. Hey, I just got an iPhone for the first time three months ago. I had a flip phone up until then.
Well, there you go. You could put all your music right on your iPhone.
I can do that too.
We have a table Saturday at Legends of the Ring, and I'm going to bring my iPod.
Okay.
And I'm just going to show you how it works.
Okay.
That's
a plan. I like that idea.
I got one better. A picture of the two of you in bed together with Matt showing you how to work the iPod.
Oh, I love it. That's a fabulous idea. But I got to charge you double.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, well, I got to charge you
triple
a fee to teach you how to do the iPod, so I only have to pay single. How do you like them apples?
That's awesome.
Oh, my God.
Well, Tammy, it has been a pleasure. I know we've taken up quite a bit of your time this evening.
What time is it?
It's almost 9 o'clock.
Holy moly, you guys. 2 hours.
Yeah, I know. This is like, this is almost as long as the Scotty Riggs interview.
Hey, you could have shut me up anytime.
No, it was a pleasure. Please. Are you kidding me?
Not at all. Well, first...
See, now you can verify and be like, you know, my backup and say that, hey, Sunny's not a bitch like everybody says she is.
We never said that.
Well, majority of people out there do.
Yeah, we do know a few that have said that, but we've never said that.
Of course.
Then surprisingly, none of them called in tonight.
Well, of course.
Pussies.
Of course.
It's exactly what I'm saying. They're keyboard warriors like, oh, you're a fucking bitch. You might as well quit right now because you're no good. You've never been anything. All right, call in and tell me that. Well, no, they couldn't do it.
No, and we've had the phones
open.
I'm
the one with the balls, not them.
Yes. Tammy and her balls will be at the Legends of the Ring convention this Saturday in Monroe, New Jersey.
All three of us will be, absolutely.
At the Crown Plaza Hotel. I think the doors open for the fans at 8:30.
God, oh, I we have it was to 9. Really, it's 8:30. I got to get there that early.
We have to get
I'll
there.
Be coming in from Manhattan.
We have to get there for 7 o'clock to start setting up. Isn't that sick? On a Saturday.
Ridiculous. Oh my God. Crazy.
Well, Tammy will be taking pictures in the, I guess, in the bed once we have that figured out.
Yes, I'm gonna work out all those details this week so we can get it done.
Well, when you get back from the Motley Crue Elton John soiree this weekend, where else can the fans catch you around this country?
God, like I said, I'm booked solid every single weekend through January right now. I am going to England in November, so all the UK fans get ready. The 16th and 17th, I'll be in Milton Keynes. And I think on the 14th, I'm going to be in Glasgow, Scotland for a special Q&A and meet and greet with just me. Where am I going to be? You want me to get my book and read you some dates? I don't know. I can't remember them off the top of my head.
Can we give out your Facebook?
Yes, give out my Facebook. It's facebook.com/Tamara, T-A-M-A-R-A, dot Sitch, S-Y-T-C-H. And my name on there, it's my full legal name, Tamara Lynn Sitch. That's the only Facebook page I have. Anything that says Tammy Sitch is a fake. Anything that says Tammy Sunny Sitch is a fake. Anything that just says Sunny is a fake. Tamara Lynn Sitch is me.
Does it...
And Twitter is W-W-E-H-O-F-E-R Sunny. So it's W-W-E Hall of Famer Sunny.
Does it creep you out that people want to be you on Facebook?
Yeah, it's pathetic.
It's a little
like,
weird.
Actually, I had an argument with these three fans today on my Facebook page because they're all calling me a phony. They said, the real Tammy on Twitter told us that this was a fake Facebook page. I'm like, oh, really? So some fake on Twitter is trying to convince them that I'm not me. So I actually took a picture of me holding a sign saying, and I said one of the guys' names, I said, so-and-so, Sean something, is an idiot, and I held up my Hall of Fame ring in front of it, and I held the page right in front of my face, and I posted it. I'm like, see, motherfucker, now you owe me an apology.
So, and now he has to go to prowrestlingtees.com/Sunny and buy a T-shirt.
Yeah, yes. Buy a T-shirt. There's seven new designs that, I believe it or not, I came up with all the ideas, and I described them, and then he drew them up. They're awesome. I really like them. And look for the book, hopefully Christmas time, if not January or February. It's called A Star Shattered. The cover is going to be amazing. It's a hot pink jacket. Up on the left-hand side is the best picture I've ever taken from the Hall of Fame in my red gown. And on the right side, my mugshot. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So check that out. It'll be on Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, Kindle, and in bookstores near you.
And you are also selling some stuff on eBay soon, I think.
Yeah, I actually went to my mom's a couple days ago, because this is about everything I own is down there, because when I was in jail, she moved it all into her house, and I just have no room for it where I am. So I went the other day, and I got a bunch of old ring outfits and bikinis from photo shoots and things like that, and I really have no room for this stuff, and I'm never going to wear any of this stuff again, so I'm going to start putting it online. I'm going to advertise it on Facebook. I might put it on eBay, or I might just, like, you know, sell them for a flat price on Facebook. So keep watching over the next week or two. And there's going to be a lot of cool stuff on there. You know, I really have no space for this stuff. And I think I'm probably going to move into Manhattan soon. And I really don't want to bring all this stuff with me. So I don't want to clutter up the man's apartment.
So we'll make a deal. I'll buy a bikini and then I'll wear it. And people
in
can take
the undercover shot.
Yes.
While you're working on the iPad.
And people can take pictures with me. It'll be a clever ruse. I'll give you half the profits.
Fabulous.
Half. If I could use your name. Not your real name, though.
Oh, and let me tell you about another thing I'm working on. I am actually going to be on a new TV show. I'm the host. It's called Bar Jitsu, The American Art of Bar Fighting. My best friend, his name is James Porco. He's the founder and the owner and creator of Bar Jitsu. Basically what it is, the name Bar Jitsu, we combine bar fighting with ninjutsu, which is a form of martial arts. He's a three-time black belt and an instructor for ninjutsu. What the whole premise of the show is, it's a guy's show. It's going to be like a Spike TV or, you know, a Bravo type of show. Let's think of combining Mansur's with the Man Show and the UFC. We're taking bar fighting, mixed martial arts, comedy, and some hot chicks, and we're rolling it all together, and we created our TV show. The whole premise of the show, basically, you know, I'm the host. I'm going to open and close the show, and I'll be throughout the show. And our setting is a bar. We're going to travel all over the country and in Canada, filming at bars on location. And the scenario is this. You know, when you walk into a bar and you see, you know, some dork standing in the corner that you know damn well he's going to get his ass kicked by the end of the night because he's either going to spill a drink on somebody or hit on somebody's girlfriend. There's always that one guy. Well, we're going to have him in a situation where, let's just say, a gang of, you know, rough and tough, you know, bar guys are just about to kick his ass with, like, pool cues or beer bottles or just their bare hands or bar stools or whatever. As soon as this guy's about to get his ass kicked, we're going to relocate him into the dojo, get him into school with our instructors, and they're going to teach him mixed martial arts moves and self-defense and how to defend himself against these fists flying, these chairs flying, these beer bottles and these pool cues. Then, once he's learned all his self-defense moves, we're going to move him back into the bar scene. We start rolling again, and that dork is going to kick some ass using what we taught him. And at the end of the show, basically, he's flanked by a lot of hot girls that are called the Bar Jitsu Girls that I'm in charge of casting, thank God. And my little sister, Juliana, is actually one of them. You can meet her this Saturday at Legends of the Ring, Juliana Fay. She's the head Bar Jitsu Girl. And it's fun, and we throw a lot of comedy in there, and we're going to have, like, our Bar Jitsu Girl Drink of the Week, and we're going to teach you how to make some mixed drinks, and it's a lot of fun. We shot the pilot 2 months ago, and it was incredible. They have a book that's actually coming out in January. It's called Bar Jitsu, the American Art of Bar Fighting. That comes out in January, and basically the show is, you know, going to be taken from the book. It's demonstrational, it's informative, it's instructional, and it's funny as hell. So you're going to have to check it out when it's on the air.
Now, knowing that Roadhouse was a movie about bar fights, and Terry Funk was involved with Roadhouse, does Terry Funk have a future in Bar Jitsu?
You know what? We are having people make cameos on every show. We're
Please,
actually getting
Terry
them in line
Funk.
Right now. A few people that we have making cameos, Mia St. John, professional, you know, female boxer. She's going to be working on the show. We have the Pit Boss, you know, Shorty Rossi. He does the Pitbull show. He's a little midget. We have him and his guys doing a show when we go out to L.A. And you know what? It's a really good idea to have Terry Funk on there because, you know, who better from Roadhouse? You know, he's the one who choreographed everything, and he's one of the main stars. So, I call him Uncle Terry. I might just call him up and say, you know, Uncle Terry, we need you on the show.
Yes, please.
But it's really cool. We're going to have a lot of cool, interesting people doing cameos on the show and special appearances. It's a lot of fun. Like, I never backed anything. Like, people come to me every day asking me to endorse their products or work on their little TV shows or their YouTube channels or, you know, and whatnot. And usually I turn everything down because a lot of it's just, you know, crap. But when James, who turned out, he ended up being my best friend. We were, like, best friends in the entire world. When he came to me with his creation, I actually said, wow, you know what? This is an original idea, and I think it's a great idea. I'm actually enjoying it. This is something I would want to watch because it's the way he presented it to me. It was just so, so cool. And I've been, you know, I started out as just the host of the show, but now I've turned into a writer and producer as well. So a lot of my input is going into the show, and I'm writing the whole script for the show as well. Because basically the whole script they had at first that they showed me, I said, there's no way I'm doing this on film. This is horrible. So he gave me basically free rein to do what I want with it. So I pretty much go out there and ad-lib just like I do, you know, every promo. So, you know, it's kind of my baby too now, not just his baby. And, you know, I really want to see this get off the ground and do well. And like I said, I don't back things I don't believe in, and I really, really believe in this product. I think it's going to be really great. And we have a merchandise line, you know, with the Bar Jitsu logo. The Bar Jitsu logo is awesome. It's beer chucks. So picture nunchucks, but
That's
with
awesome.
Beer bottles instead of handles.
That is so awesome.
Clever.
It's great. Yeah, I'll show you. I'll give you the business cards for it on Saturday when I see you, so you can see a little bit of the product.
Excellent.
And the I shot a commercial with Juliana for the book, for when the book comes out, and that's actually on YouTube. So I can get you the link for the YouTube commercial too, so you can see, you know, you can see a little bit of what we're doing.
Send it our way. We'll throw it on the Facebook.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. But yeah, I really believe in it. I really think it's going to go far. So, and once we get on the air, I'm going to work in a deal to get our Bar Jitsu girls into Maxim, and you know, we're going to take it from there. We're doing a calendar with the girls. It's going to be awesome. Really, really good. Really fun.
I love hearing folks from the business just exploring all these other avenues. It's just so wonderful and how creative a lot of these, you know, the people are that are in the business.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I have this show. Like I said, I'm going to send mock reels out to, you know, TV stations to just try to do some straight broadcasting, whether it be like a Entertainment Tonight or sports casting or even just straight news, you know, whatever it is, you know, I'm going to try to do that because I don't, you know, I have been in the wrestling business for 23 years. There's really not much more I can do. So why stop here? You know, my career has been in front of a camera, so I'm just going to keep on going. And also next year I'm going back to med school. So I'm going to have quite a few things on my plate in 2014.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy. But hey, life is good right now. You know, I couldn't be healthier. And, you know, let me tell you, being sober is a lot better than being drunk. I'll tell you that much. I feel younger. I act younger. Everything is great. It really is. I'd recommend rehab and jail to everybody out there. It does wonders for you.
All right. I'm going to go commit a felony tonight.
While you're drunk.
Give me the drinks. Let's get drunk and let's do something stupid.
Tammy, thank you again so much for joining us tonight. This has been a pleasure.
Anytime. The boyfriend is probably waiting to call as soon as we hang up.
Well, it wasn't time wasted, I hope.
No, absolutely not. I had a blast with you guys. Awesome. And you'll get to meet him on Saturday, most likely. I think he's coming.
That's good. Awesome. Saturday. Saturday.
So you can meet the man that has stolen my heart.
That's great.
Maybe he can take us to see Motley
Crue. And he's not a wrestler.
Isn't
that great? He's not a wrestler.
Oh,
and he's my age. It's fabulous.
Does he have more room on that plane to take us to see Motley Crue?
It seats 12 people.
We're game.
I dress like a chick.
The plane is a Gulfstream 550. Google it and you'll see what kind of plane he's got.
That's awesome.
Can I?
Pretty damn amazing.
Can I fly on the wing?
What's wrong with you?
No? I think we're actually going to christen the plane on Sunday. It hasn't been christened yet. Yeah.
Shotgun.
I'll bring the straw.
What? You're gross. You're such an animal, Tony.
I know.
Nasty.
It's late.
It is late.
Oh, God. Tammy, thank you again so much. We will see you on Saturday.
All right. Anytime you want to do it again, just let me know.
Sounds awesome. Like a plan. We'll bring you a T-shirt Saturday, too.
Yes.
You better.
You don't have to wear it, but we'll bring it to you.
Well, you know what? I'll put it on. You can take some pictures and you can post it.
You're
sounds awesome. That really cool. Just made my night.
I know. I'm cool like that, you know?
Definitely are. Definitely are. Well, for the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast and for Kevin, I'm Tony.
I'm Matt.
And we have been here for the past 2 hours with our gracious guest, Sonny. Thank you again so much, Sonny, and we'll see you on Saturday.
Anytime. I'll see you Saturday. Stay cool, guys.
You too, Tammy.